We Can Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices.
T-minus 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1, 0.
We Can confirm.
Ignition. Liftoff. Liftoff.
Dedication, folks. That's what it takes to bring you We Can Confirmed every week. Yes.
Dead, got a lot of dedication.
You are just into the singing thing tonight, aren't you? Folks, yeah. You need to watch the pregame show.
There's a lot of singing.
There's a lot of singing. Jeff may or may not have been singing Cher.
Hey, I was goaded into it.
Spoiler alert, he was singing Cher.
It's late. It's a late night party episode. So hunker down, folks.
There you go. This is We Can Confirmed. I'm Garnet Lee. Of course, Mr. Jeff Cannata here at my side.
Happy to be here. Two N's, one T, of course, if you want to follow me on Twitter.
And
wow.
And backed our one of our most triumphant guest returns. Nicole Zavalich is here from
G4. You can't see it, but I'm like
returning champ.
I would say probably the most well-received guest we've ever had.
Stop.
Yeah.
So you have an obligation to ruin that.
So
let me start by saying that I love the PC. NeoGAF is my favorite website. And
kissing doesn't work.
Yeah.
They sense that like wolves.
Okay. Yeah. They're like, next thing you know, they'll be like, oh, Nicole is always on there, like, trying to, like, figure out what her people want to listen to. She should just be more confident in herself, and...
God, I need to work on my confidence.
Seriously.
I know.
So will it be sophomore slump or glory? I don't know. We'll find out.
If it's anything like actual high school, then this is going to be really awkward for everybody.
Really?
Yeah.
Why?
Because I was really awkward in high school.
And we're all going to end up dancing arms length apart from
each other.
Dude,
I'm 40
so gotta save room
something
for Jesus,
and I'm still
man.
Really awkward.
I went to Catholic school, so there was a lot of saving room for Jesus.
What?
High school.
You know, there's a space between bodies where Jesus hangs out.
In dances, you really can't like touch each other.
Yeah.
And that's what they say.
What?
It's a space for Jesus. We can move on.
Are you... No, we cannot move on. Hold on a minute. I've just been like introduced to an entirely crazy notion of,
you know, how you dance at a yes. high school dance and you put your arms length apart, and the chaperones, if they're on their game, they will make sure there's that. Not,
are you kidding
not
me?
Not torsos touching.
Yes.
So nothing no,
and
happening.
My chaperones were like every science teacher.
So what you're saying is, in the time from when I went to high school in the dark ages,
right,
to the modern world, we actually got more dark ages.
That's right, because you guys ruined it for everybody. You guys were doing the twist and the swim and the jitterbug.
We weren't doing that, no.
And those kinds of gyrations frightened.
It's just not acceptable for today's youth.
That's exactly right.
I don't know if public schools are the same.
We live in such
a Catholic
weird,
school. So.
Weird
world
I imagine sometimes. If you went to schools nowadays, there would be nothing like that. It would be kids grinding up on each other and being like, bringing sexy back.
There you go. It's good for them. It's good. It's healthy. It's that's
exercise.
It's exercise.
Kids.
Garnet Lee, everybody.
What? Look, it's not like I'm running for president or something. I can say something dumb.
All right.
All right. So we have lots to talk about today. I will not bore you with any more of our prattling on. We'll go right
to the prattling on.
Right to the game everyone wants to hear Jeff go crazy about.
Really? We're starting there?
Yeah.
Here's the thing.
Resident Evil.
Yeah. Here's the
six.
Thing. Do you remember last week when I was all hot and bothered about the game and I said, I wish I could talk about it now because a week from now, it's all going to sort of be redundant and moot.
But it's not redundant and moot.
It's
such a big topic. Oh, come on.
It's it feels like beating a dead horse at this point.
That's just because you don't like it and you have not articulated
your point. Does anybody like it?
Yes.
Well, it's because everybody has come out and said they don't like it.
No, everybody has not said they do not like it.
Also, I'm playing a couple of really great games that I love and I'm happy about.
I know.
Can't
banana,
talk about those
banana
now.
And what was the other one?
Orange.
Banana and Orange.
Uh-huh.
He loves Banana and he loves Orange.
I do. And they both need to be played by all.
But
I want to talk about how
he cannot comment on either of them because it might do something to forsake his honor.
Here's the thing about Banana.
Honor.
Banana was a great fruit when I was young and it was out on a on the before we had consoles. And now Banana is back, and you didn't think Banana could work, but it's still delicious and it's still nutritious.
I think you must have put the peel in the oven. And
and orange is something brand new, but orange feels like a mashup between orange
like
feels
a
definitely like a
fruit
like
and
like a mashup between. Can I say? I shouldn't say.
I think people caught on by now, though. Which fruit's which?
You mean between Half-Life and Bioshock?
I was going to say Bioshock and Deus Ex.
Oh, okay.
That's what orange tastes like.
Yeah. Well, it depends on how much you take away from the art direction.
Yes.
We have next week, brother. Next week, we will be back.
I know.
And we can talk about both of those games. And good. And Orange and Banana will be thrilled for us to talk about them. And we'll have a great time.
Medley.
Now, it just bums me out that there's been all these Monday freaking embargo dates, which screws us for this show.
But they come out on Tuesday, and then we talk about them at the end of the week. It's fine. It's the way it works, brother. It's
yeah,
fine.
Just stop getting games early.
All right. Well, so I'm going to have to stand up on this table, drop my pants, and drop trowel on Resident Evil
This
now.
Is not how I wanted this episode
to
go
at all. Take a crap all over Resident Evil.
You don't have to do that. You could tell us how much you love it.
It makes me sad.
You could be like, and I really, I tried to figure this out, but I do not know how to pronounce this. Ritri-Kauchi? It's R-T... R-T-R-I-C-O-C-H-E, who posted this. Resident Evil 6 is exactly where the series should be. Mm-hmm. Capcom has adapted this title or else it would have died. My buddies and I bought it and played it and we loved it. And none of us love Call of Duty. For every lost Resident Evil fan, for every fan lost, Resident Evil will make new ones. Guaranteed.
Okay. I'm happy to hear that. I had no idea there was such a guarantee yet to be had out there. I'm very pleased that he is aware of all the tastes of all the people so he can make that guarantee. and I may, nothing would please me more than to have people that have fun with this game. I want people to have fun with it. I had no fun with it. I felt tortured by this game, and it was the opposite of fun.
Why did you feel tortured, Jeff? Because tell me about your feelings.
You know how often I came on
Where did Resident Evil hurt you?
I'll show you on the bear.
Oh.
It's right there and right there and all up in there.
Oh, don't touch that.
You know how on various shows that you have hosted, Garnett, I have come on and defended Resident Evil 5.
Yes.
To Mark McDonald and various other...
I have defended Resident Evil 5 as well.
Yeah, I think you piled on it a little bit, if memory serves. I think the
I don't think you can pile
listener...
on... I think pile on and a little bit don't go together. I had some... issues with it because I still had the warm afterglow of 4,
right,
which is now completely dissipated.
Yeah,
I still had the warm afterglow of 4, and then we got to 5, and I was trying to hold on, you know.
I had a lot of fun with 5. I really did.
And there were pieces of 5 certainly that worked well. A lot of the co-op action stuff was very cool. You know, I think that's been pointed out well, where you were at once both trying to balance saving yourself from a zombie horde that's right in front of you, but at the same time needing to pitch in to help your partner, else they were really screwed.
Yes.
And that's a cool dramatic tension moment.
Yes.
So they must have tons of that in 6 because you're playing co-op the whole time.
You are playing co-op the whole time. And I did. Now, the sum total of my experience with Resident Evil 6, it should be said, was pre-release. I was playing on a retail copy, but I was not playing in the full environment of all the people who have the game.
Mm-hmm.
Still, I was matched up a couple of times with other, I would assume, other reviewers or whoever else has the game.
There were places at Brook Street, too, though.
Yeah. Okay. Well, whatever happened, I got matched up with people at certain points. But I also played a large portion of the game solo and playing with AI-controlled partners. So I had both of those experiences, and neither one was particularly fun. It is better when you're co-opted with another person, even not being able to know who that is, even at the point that I was playing. And I really like the idea of these cool crossover moments where the two people that I'm playing with are matched up with two people in a different campaign, and they have these intersection points. That's a really clever concept, and when it happens right, it's pretty exciting. The idea that four people all playing their own various games are matched up in this unique moment that's different from all their perspectives is pretty cool.
Very cool.
And I think more games, I think as we move along and technology and internet connections and stuff continue to improve, I think there's going to be more and more companies taking those kinds of risks and experimenting with that. And we're going to see more and more of that, like, oh, my game is just sort of populated by people without me. You know, like, we heard about that. Was that The Crossing, or was it supposed to do that and never came out? But I think there's going to be more of that happening. And it's a cool idea. And I give Capcom credit for trying that. That's about as far as I can go with my compliments.
I was like, this is sounding pretty good so far. Okay, yeah. They're innovating. Okay, great. Yeah.
It is. It's innovative, and it's really a cool, from a narrative point of view, it's really cool.
So when you
can
said,
have three different campaigns and they intersect at certain points.
There's
it's
four?
Neat.
What is Ada's campaign?
There's four campaigns, right?
Yeah.
Is there four? Is there three that are selectable at the start?
And yeah, right, and then I think Ada is unlocked at the end, and then like her campaign ties in to an extent, kind of the other campaign. So you see kind of it answers some questions.
Well, I'll be honest, really I played it. One. I played one campaign.
Well,
I played one.
How can you even...
Was it the Jedi campaign?
So you can fully discount my opinion if you choose. But that's about as much of the game as I could stomach.
So I take it you played Leon's?
No. I played Jack.
Dreamy,
what the hell is wrong with you?
We divvied them up. The TRS is three hosts, so we did the first three campaigns that you can select. And we divvied them up. Because we had one copy of the game and we had a week to play it. So that's the truth. And you feel free, listener, to discount my opinion after that. But I will say I played many hours of this game and it was excruciating and frustrating and sad.
So you don't like pro wrestling?
Actually, I do like pro wrestling. Yeah, I mean, I spend a lot of time meleeing because it's... I mean, I just feel so sad.
I'm trying to offer you some interjections. Like, for those of us who watched the Totally Rad Show review, which I'm not trying to bait you. I'm trying to bait you a little bit to come out, though, and articulate things a little better and not just be angry and upset at it. Because look, you did like Resident Evil 5. So
yes.
Then give me a why Resident Evil 5, for its flaws, was successful in your mind versus 6, which...
Here's the way I look at it is each iteration of Resident Evil, it started as this survival horror game, which was sort of an exploration, puzzle-based experience that had some nerve-wracking combat elements where you were ill-equipped to deal with them. You sort of had to fumble with your gun. You had to stop in one spot and aim slowly as the zombie shambled toward you. And you hoped you got a headshot. And you had to conserve ammo, and all these things, all these elements added to the feeling of surviving a horrific moment, not being an awesome super action hero guy. Okay. And each iteration, as we've moved farther and farther from that, has gone sort of half steps into the action direction. And I know a lot of people criticized 5. I felt it managed to walk a line pretty well between feeling like I was surviving and getting from point to point, and also having sort of big set piece action sequences. They just have completely thrown out any semblance of horror. There's no horror here. It's an action game with monsters.
In the campaign you were in, though, look at Dan's response to the game,
right,
which was markedly different because...
No, you're right.
Because
I'm only speaking from my perspective, and maybe as a responsible reviewer, I should go back and play all the other campaigns. I just can't imagine the pure mechanics of this game. I just can't stomach another 6 to 8 hours twice.
Well, was it buggy? I mean, what about the mechanics?
It is clunky. It is.
So for people who are listening first, why don't we do this?
Sure.
Describe the character you played, the scenario, just sort of a quick overview like we would do with a review.
Sure. I played the Jack campaign, Jack and Sherry. I played as Sherry.
You didn't get the wrestling. The reason I brought the wrestling thing.
Right. He does it a lot.
He's a crazy, right? Yeah.
Yeah. And he's also the sort of the flippy dippy parkoury kind of dude.
Yeah.
And you don't get to do that if you're... But I intentionally sort of made interesting decisions because I was excited to try to play... Because you can really play a lot of different styles in this game. I will say this. From a story perspective, if you're into the kind of storytelling that Resident Evil does, which is that sort of over the top, really up its own ass, but in a fun kind of way, the stories are cool. The stories are well presented and have twists and turns, and there's always big, crazy moments that happen. It's just playing that isn't any fun for me, any fun at all. And it is because
the raw part of where your controller meets your hands.
Yes. Yes. And that is because you're in this weird place of it wanting you to sort of be in an action game, but it doesn't feel right to be in it, to play it like an action game. You're constantly running out of ammo, as you should in a Resident Evil game, but it basically meant that I was relying on melee all the time, which exposes the atrocious enemy AI, which you can explain away by saying, oh, hey, it's zombies, except for the fact that it's not really zombies anymore. It's these sort of mutated soldiers that are constantly populating my world, fully equipped with AK-47s and
yeah, the zombies
rifles.
Shoot back now.
Yes.
They the shoot zombies shoot back.
But in a sort of weird, I could run right up to them and just whack them with my stick as they sort of slowly aimed their gun. And there's so many moments in this game where I wanted to throw my controller in the corner of the room. One of them I mentioned on TRS, I'll repeat it here. There's a snow level where you have to run uphill and you're fighting guys all the way, and they keep, you know, arriving up this snow hill, and they can knock you down. And if they knock you down, you slide down the hill. So at a certain point, after four or five times of being sliding helplessly for 30 or 40 seconds, just sliding, down the mountain, frustrated, I just said, fuck this. And I got up and I ran around the edge and didn't engage any enemies and ran up, did the thing I needed to do, and ran back to the start. And at the end of the level, it was like, record time. You did it in record time. We didn't expect anybody to be able to do that. It's like, well, I didn't play your game. I avoided playing your game because it was so not fun.
No, you outsmarted the game.
I didn't outsmart. I didn't feel smart. It felt sad. Another sequence, I mean, there's all tons of QTEs as well, and so many of them, if you do them wrong, it's game over and game over screen. It's game over screen.
That's
reload.
That's common for QTEs, to be frank.
Is that fun?
That's a whole other debate, but most...
I'm not asking if QTEs are fun. I'm asking if not pressing X fast enough...
I don't think so.
Going to a game over screen
You know what? I agree. I don't think so.
Yeah.
Which just reminded me, we haven't talked, but I got past the multiple Ragnaroks attacking the island.
Oh, did you have to grind?
No.
Wow.
But that's a whole other subject.
No, we have to have that discussion because
we can get back to that because we can get back to that. But anyway, QTEs typically can end that way because look, the whole point of it is that there's an action sequence happening. You're in dire peril and you need to Oh, I got to react.
Right.
And I will be the first to say that I don't find them fun because they only bring you a fail state.
Right.
The positive is that you get to watch the next section of the
unless you do it like Heavy Rain does it, which is sort of branching.
See, and I don't think those are really QTEs. And then that gets into discussion of like, are these true QTEs? Because there's some of them, if I've watched, you know, I watched a lot of Resident Evil because I haven't had a chance to play it because Andrew's been playing it for review. So I've been studying up, like watching videos and watching gameplays online. Like the part of these, there are though stick movings, right? Mm-hmm. And so does that count as a QTE? Because
yes.
I kind of like, but that, don't you like that kind of engagement?
Sometimes. I mean, there's one in particular. I'll give you the example. I also mentioned this on TRS, so forgive me for being redundant, but it's pretty blatantly awful. And that is, I'm in the back of an airplane. It's this big action sequence. There's a big monster. By the way, it chains together boss fights. Like, oh, God, I finally just got past that. Okay. Oh, no, another boss fight a second later, which is kind of frustrating. But, you know, could be cool. Anyway, so there's sort of a boss battle in the back of this airplane that is stupid. He just keeps popping through windows, and you run out of ammo, as you're going to do, I just have to run up and try to hit him with my stick and avoid him. But then he finally gets inside the plane, and the plane's going down, and I'm sliding. The back of the plane opens up. I'm sliding down the back. He's lower than me. Oh, QTE moment. You see a canister of gas. You can shoot it, and it'll explode him. It'll perfect timing. All you got to do is move your reticle over and pull the trigger. Only problem is, because of where I was before I triggered that QTE, I was using my stick to do melee because I'd run out of bullets in my gun. So it does the cool cinematic that leads me up to that moment where she's got the gun in her hand. It loads me into my screen ready for my QTE, and all of a sudden my gun magically transforms into the stick, which is the last weapon I was using, and I plummet to my death because I can't shoot the gas canister.
Bro, you should have been using your gun.
Should have been using my gun.
Your ammo-less gun.
Reload. Do that again. Changing my stick. Okay, frantically. There's no pause when you change weapons. Frantically trying to change into my gun and then aim fast enough and I'm dead. Six or seven times of that before I got fast enough with changing my weapon and shooting the gas canister.
Practice. Do you magically perfect. Have ammo?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's great. No, I mean, the only type of, normally quick time events don't bother me too much unless I've been playing on a PS3 controller, then I switch to an Xbox controller, and then my X's are messed up. That's always a bummer for me.
I still have a problem with O's and squares for some reason.
For some reason,
my brain
doesn't
do it right.
After playing one console for a long time, or even for a few minutes, really, I know which buttons are which, but like if I'm just getting into it, like then I forget. I just completely forget.
Really?
Like, yeah, we're circle.
That is so weird for me because even when I'm playing on the Xbox, I still think of it as X, square, triangle, circle.
Really? Yeah. I wish I did. I so often on the PS3 have to look down at my controller for between O's and squares. I don't know why my brain just doesn't get it.
I agree.
Weird.
Maybe it's shapes.
I don't know.
Never did well in geometry. I don't know what it is.
There's a game that I can't remember which game it was, but recently where it gave you the button prompt, but it also positioned the button prompt on the screen in relation to where the button is on your thumb.
Walking Dead.
Was it Walking Dead?
I think Walking Dead is it.
I think there's another game that was a console game
Smart.
That did it. Maybe it was Walking Dead on the console. Anyway.
Well, then let me give you.
I like that.
You know. I don't want this to be. I actually was hoping that we could have more, you know, interesting discussion about Resident Evil.
I'm sorry, I'm just ranting about it.
I'm sorry,
I
you're so boring.
Why are you so like?
Yeah, it's nothing.
It's weird
here.
Because you really did like 5 so much.
I did.
By the way, you never answered my question. What was it about 5, which is campy and has boss battles after boss battles? It has a lot of these things you're describing that made it tolerable because it had quick time events. It had boss battle after boss. It had bad animation.
This is gonna sound crazy. I think it's a be careful what you wish for situation because I truly believe being able to move and shoot ruined Resident Evil.
Well, you're not alone in that regard. I think there's a lot of people who think that.
I think it's the case. I think you wanted it, you got it, and look what you reap the sad result.
But I mean, aren't some of the reasons people are saying this one kind of went astray was because they tried to westernize it. There was too many people working on it. Like,
seems to be the case.
None of those are necessarily because, or you know, the running and shooting thing. Like,
well, no, I mean, I think that's what's Western about it.
Running and shooting?
Yeah, it's a third-person action game. They made a third-person action game in a survival horror engine.
Bifurcated.
I mean,
No, I had to wonder for a second.
Bifurcated.
I mean, it's two things split down the middle, and it's neither of them is good.
I know.
Yeah, I'm just.
Word of the day, though.
Word of the day. So let me then give you 1UP.com spoke with some of the Capcom high-ups who worked on the game, executive producer, etc. And here's some of the quotes, because I think these are very pertinent to what we're talking about. This one comes from executive producer Hiroyuki Kobayashi. Have you met Kobayashi before? He's usually at a lot of Capcom.
Yes.
He's a really, really smart guy. Nowadays, to have a system where you're restricted to 6 or 8 items, and that's all you can have with you, I think the core fans might really like that, but it might not get Resident Evil into a lot of people's hands. We want to make it as accessible as possible. A system like that is just much too difficult for what people want from the games nowadays.
What, no, I don't understand what he's saying.
He's saying, so if you go back to like one of the things that people have brought up is that Resident Evil was always a inventory limited.
Mm-hmm.
You brought about the tension of standing still. Another one of the points of tensions was, do I keep this gun? Because this damn shotgun takes up all these slots,
right.
And I can't keep enough bullets for my 9mm.
Right.
And I could keep 4 more bullets for my 4 more boxes of ammo for my 9mm. But if I do that, I'm not going to have the shotgun. And I'm going to need the shotgun because I'm going to get to these liquors. But when I get to the liquors, I might not even have any ammo for that left.
Right.
And so there was a lot of tension there.
And there was never waves of enemies coming at you. I mean, there were so many moments in this game where I'm standing and there's just waves of enemies. And literally my objective on the screen is eliminate all the enemies. That's not Resident Evil. That's not survival horror. That's fucking a third-person action game. And
how about this? The game's producer said this, and I shouldn't try this, but it's Yoshiaki Hirabayashi. Hopefully I got that right. It says, we're making games and we need to have mass market appeal in order to survive.
That's the problem.
How far do we go into horror before we lose the support of the average player? How far are we going to lessen the horror elements at the risk of losing core fans, including Resident Evil fans? Where's the Venn diagram that shows the happy medium of these things?
That's the problem. If that's your concern, you're making shit. I'm sorry, but that's the truth.
The challenge is trying to push it as close to the edge either way so that we can satisfy both groups of people.
But I mean, from those quotes, their minds were in the right place. Like, they really wanted to satisfy as many people as possible. Not sell out, but to satisfy as many people as possible. And they have to do that.
How about make the game you want?
For Capcom, and I don't know if they have... I mean, it's not like they're independent developers who can make games for themselves. I get where they're coming from. Obviously, they went astray. They didn't do it right, and a lot of people are really angry. But, I mean, isn't that what you have to do to make a AAA game, is that you have to try to appeal to the hardcore and the new gamers?
I understand, and I'm sort of not being fair. I understand there's pressures to make a hit game, and there's pressure, and anybody wants their thing to be embraced by the widest number of people, any creative endeavor, of course. But you can't be looking for the Venn diagram of all possible gamers in order to, like, then place your game right in the center. I'm telling you, I feel in my heart of hearts, and it's a cliche, but you make the game you want to make that is as artistically, you know, you just go for it, and people will come to you rather than the other way around. And I guarantee you that's how the first Resident Evil got made. Nobody was like, you know what would be really great? There's nothing horrific in this game. There's nothing horrific in Resident Evil 6. It's violent. It's action-packed. But there's no scares. There's nothing scary about it. And it makes me sad because these games used to be, I mean, the experience I had playing Resident Evil 2 was hanging out with my buddies. We were playing Level or Life, passing the controller around, telling each other which corridor to go down, screaming when something would go, you know, like jumping out of our skins when something crazy would happen, trying to figure out the puzzles together. None of that happens in these games. Yes, you're playing co-op now and you can play with your friends, but you're playing co-op to revive each other and shoot as many zombies as you can. And that is just like we have 1,000 games where I can shoot a shit ton of zombies. Just because you slap your fiction onto it doesn't make it exciting. Make something that isn't already in the marketplace and people will come to you, especially when you've already established, like, this genre is dying. I'm telling you, I'm going to have the same problems with Dead Space 3, I predict. It's going to be the same bullshit.
Did you like Dead Space 1 and 2?
No, but at least Dead Space 1 is a survival horror game to a large extent. I mean, it's more action-y than Resident Evil, but
Dead Space 3 is they're doing the same thing.
Exactly.
It's that Venn diagram. But I feel like that's coming from publishers and not the developers.
All right. I'm too much of a fan of Resident Evil to leave it on this note, so I want to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about whether or not Resident Evil can be resuscitated, and what out of the Resident Evils we loved would help it get back on track.
Let me say this, too, before we go to break.
Yes? I was giving you an out.
I love loving things, and you're going to hear a lot of love next week when I get to talk about two
types of fruits
that are some of the best fruits I've ever tasted. Certainly top fruits of the year.
High in vitamins.
You heard it here. Jeff loves the banana.
And he's a fruit.
We Can Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is filled with game information, the latest gaming news from shacknews.com, and videos and screenshots for over 8,000 games. New version 2.0 for the iPhone and iPod Touch includes cool new features like social interaction. Now you can follow and interact with the crew from We Can Confirmed in the Gamefly app. Check out what Jeff Cannata, Del Rio, and I are playing and saying about the latest games. And as always, the app is free and available now for the iPhone, Android, and Palm mobile devices. Okay, so at the beginning of the show segment on Resident Evil 6, I pointed out one of the comments from someone about how Resident Evil 6 has actually done exactly what the series needed to. So that's one point of view. Here's another point of view that's also related. A couple people had this. First one was concise. Mecha Tofu Pirate said, did it really need to be more mainstream? Resident Evil 4 did well, and that game was awesome. And I think by awesome, he also meant that it was a little hardcore. David Craddock went a little deeper on that. It says, Capcom has forgotten everything Shinji Mikami taught them with Resident Evil 4. That game birthed the action survival horror genre, emphasizing action while weaving in horror in all the right places. It was accessible to new players, yet still catered to the whims of the Resident Evil faithful. Resident Evil 4 successfully blended action, survival, and horror elements to create a game that appealed to everyone. It was accessible to new blood, yet still catered to the elements for which it was known and loved. Those elements, can we bring them back? Are they still viable in a modern setting?
Yeah,
would you still want to play a Resident Evil 1? Or what's your favorite Resident Evil?
Two.
Okay. So what about, and incidentally, folks, Nicole's not a huge Resident Evil fan. So
does it show?
She's kind of been quiet. She's like, I'm not.
Your favorite is Code Veronica, right, Garnet?
So actually, in thinking about, I've been prepping for this show because, you know, I love Resident Evil.
Yeah.
And I've always said Code Veronica, absolutely my favorite game. And I'm wavering a little bit on that because I remember how cool the flashing system was in 2. Mm-hmm. And that was really innovative and cool. And I thought about it because I thought about the crossover part of 6. Similar ideas, right?
Right.
Like, you're in these weird, tense environments. There's all these characters that you love and you want to keep up. Like there's this group and they're all involved in the situation, but you can only follow one of them at a time. And so they flash and give you a glimpse of like what's happening someplace else.
Right.
And I thought, wow, that is really cool. That is such a great storytelling tool. And I thought, well, duh, they've used it really well in 2 as well, just in a different sort of sense. And 2 was really good. And I didn't like 3. You know, Ariel loves 3.
Mm-hmm.
The whole chase mechanic thing really worked for her. But you can see parts of 3, the chase mechanic, mm-hmm. like bringing over into Chris's game here.
Yeah.
Which, like, from Alex talking about it, like, right, like, it sounds like there's some similarity there. So there are still pieces there. Could it be that it's not relevant anymore, or what would it take to be relevant?
I think it takes courage. It takes courage to make a game that's slow, that doesn't string you along. I mean, I think I talked about this a little while ago when I played the Devil May Cry HD compilation,
mm-hmm.
where you, on one disc, you see the evolution of that series too. Now, it's little apples and oranges, to continue the fruit analogy.
It's a theme.
But you definitely see the passage of time and the necessity to keep ramping up and eliminating any downtime. Can't have downtime. Got to keep pushing the player forward. And that works fine for Devil May Cry. It's not trying to do the same type of thing. If you're truly serious about making a survival horror game and offering the player an experience of trying to survive zombies or mutated whatevers, have the courage to allow the game to be still and quiet. And
there can be oftentimes nothing scarier than that.
Exactly.
Silent Hill, I think, was masterful.
Walking through the fog is the scariest thing ever with nothing happening. Some ambient sound, and that's all you need. What were you saying?
Oh, I said hence the name. Yeah. But you were saying in the previous segment that it's the it's a dying genre. It's the survival horror. Now, why is that? Now, isn't it possible that a lot of the mainstream, because gaming's bigger than ever, and so it's not just kind of the people who like to play games, who like to play challenging games. Now there's people who want instant gratification. They don't want difficult puzzles, and they want lots of ammo around them. And I think it's possible that there are a lot of casual, I hate to say casual, but like there are a lot of gamers who don't consider themselves gamers who are buying the Halos and Call of Duties, and they don't want something that's slow and challenging. And I think that's why people are afraid.
But that's okay. You don't have to make everything for everybody.
No, of course not. But I mean,
it could still be a big hit.
People want to make money, and that's the problem.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
I just feel like it's going to be hard for a AAA developer to take such risks. And that's kind of why we're seeing so many repetitive games and so many games that are trying to follow the action thing. But I mean,
that's what's so wrongheaded about art. If you look at the history of any medium, it's the followers can make money in the short term, but it's the bold leaders that make the shit ton of money in the long term. It's you know what I mean? It's when you make something that's daring and that leads the audience rather than follows the audience will come to you. Now, I have to say, because you brought up me saying it's kind of a dying genre, there's a lot of people that have pointed out, and of course I'm aware of them, Amnesia, Slender Man, you know, these smaller, more independent games that are really taking up the mantle of a horrific game experiences and doing some really interesting, daring things. So that shouldn't be ignored.
They take their scary very seriously.
Sure.
So that is a different tact as well.
Sure.
Because part of the appeal, I think, of Resident Evil was that while it was survival horror, it was maybe it had startles,
yeah.
maybe it had gruesome scenes, but it wasn't something that was going to give you nightmares. It wasn't something that was
right. I mean, but
it wasn't. You know, the intensity level was different, and the manner of putting it in front of you was different.
Yes, the thing that you get in interactive entertainment when you're trying to scare someone is this wonderful thing. I mean, in a movie, you watch the main character walk into the room. You don't want them to go into that room, but you're watching them do it, and you're like, oh, God, don't go in there, don't go in there. In a video game, you have to push forward.
Yeah.
You're the one who's walking into that room. And there's nothing more engaging than that when you're really, you know, in that situation and feeling the scare and feeling the chill of what might be around that next corner. That is completely abandoned in Resident Evil 6. There's nothing akin to that moment at all.
Well, I mean, I think the piece that comes up is there's very little ebb and flow, which is why people like Leon's campaign, because mm-hmm. Leon's campaign does have some degree of downtime to it, does have some degree of exploring, don't know what's going to happen, don't know what's going to be behind the next door. Oh, it's not a zombie. Like, they actually play that up some.
Right.
They actually play around a little bit with, oh, it's not a zombie behind every door.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that so much of the rest of the game is very combat intensive, does have a lot of more combat in your face. Oh, my God, here's another horde of zombies to get through.
Yeah.
Here's another bunch of melee targets. Here's another bunch of guys to shoot. I think that it could be done. I think that the pieces that need to come back, so just kind of thinking of it off the top of our head, is they need to get back to really condensing the story beats around a not ridiculous, but maybe more graphic novel, like little hyper realistic, little crazy over the top, not trying to be like, I feel like the shift that started with 4 to like do away with Umbrella and bring it into a more modern world was starting to make it, well, Umbrella was kind of crazy, but now it's terrorists with bioweapons.
Right.
And we can almost kind of get our heads around that, you know? We can kind of get our heads around the idea of terrorists with something horrible. Maybe it wouldn't be a virus that makes us into zombies, but, you know, we've all seen stuff about like bird flus and, you
sure.
know, heard stories about, you know, people engineering
sure.
Weapons of mass destruction around
yeah.
around viruses. So that starts to be an intelligible thing. And terrorism and this international scene, and it's not quite so ridiculous and fanciful. And because it's not quite so ridiculous and fanciful, then part of the mystery illusion starts to like drain off of it. It's not like this cool, crazy, wonderful palace of insanity. It starts to become like this just weird, dark, ugly reflection mm-hmm. of the real world, right?
Yeah.
So I think that you got to get back to having a degree of fun with it, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Fun or like nonsensical, like Pyramid Head style crazy?
I don't know if it has to be Pyramid Head style crazy. I mean, I think that there's a spot for that in Silent Hill. Silent Hill is just really twisted and
right.
And effed up, and
to be fair,
I don't really have to go that far.
There's some fun in 6. I mean, there was a really cool motorcycle chase moment that.
But I'm just talking about the canon.
Yeah.
So I'm just talking about the story, right?
Yeah, I agree. For me, I think that what they need to really get back is that sense of exploration.
Yeah.
And that's kind of where I was headed with this idea of you're the one that has to push forward on the controller. If I have to walk around, like in previous versions, a mansion or you know, outdoor area even, but if I'm required to look in nooks and crannies and walk down corridors that I don't want to walk down, and I have that choice, but I have to make that choice, like, oh, crap, I got to walk down there. I know someone's going to be down there. That you're already in a tense, thrilling environment. I mean, these games have become corridor shooters.
Yeah.
And there's one way to go, and you run full speed ahead that direction just to get to the next enemy who you're going to either pummel or shoot.
So you're thinking about this. I think we're thinking about similar things, but in different ways. I was coming at it. What I was going to talk about was that each time the player encounters something in the world, it needs to be for a reason and have something that's happening around it, right?
Yeah.
And not just be, oh, I'm shooting down some more zombie hordes. Maybe a couple times in the game you are shooting down zombie hordes, but there's a reason that you've gotten into that. Like, you've broken out into the street finally, and holy shit, there's a horde running down the street at you, and you're going to deal with that real quickly. But not just, I'm going through another hallway that's got another 8 zombies in it so that I can get to the end of the hallway where there's another boss. And that,
yeah.
Like, you can't do that. You need to get back to this pacing thing. You need to get back to understanding, I'm looking. I hit something, things happen, and then there's a reason they happen. And I come across the snake, and I come across the beehive, and and all of those pieces come together to create memorable events. That's what I got. They have to come together to create events that you remember and give you signposts along the way of your adventure.
And I think that what's a great carrot on a stick to get you to continue exploring? I happen to be in favor of puzzles. I think walking to the end of a hallway and finding a door that I can't open that has to have, I need something to be able to get past this. And then, so I have to go back and look around and go in an area that I didn't want to go down.
Even if it's reading the signs of the zodiac or something,
I mean,
like nonsensical like that?
There's better things and worse things. And of course, I'm in favor of good puzzles. But even the sort of rudimentary find the key card or you know, rotate the statue the right direction from the early games, it gives you a reason and it gives you something to do that isn't combat, and it gives you a reason to continue exploring. Mm-hmm. And that feeling of being a stranger in a strange land, of being a character that's not where it should be and there's dangers that lurk around every corner, but it's not because I'm – you know, barreling down the hallway ready to shoot whatever pops out. It's because I feel underpowered and scared. And that's horror. That's what's fun about that genre.
Yep.
Yeah.
I agree. I think there's every reason to think that survival horror, especially through Resident Evil, could absolutely make a return to the scene and come back. I think that it needs to feel comfortable doing what it does well, remember what got it there, and not worry about trying to bring in pieces from other great games. So yeah, like, yes, there are places where action sequences would work, but it could merit, you know, equally well learning from Uncharted and Tomb Raider and those games, what they bring, and not the shooty parts of Uncharted.
I think
the
that
exploration and
we're
I'm not
at,
saying make them into a puzzle game,
right? But we're looking at the next Naughty Dog game,
Last of Us.
I mean, I think that's really the spiritual successor to this genre. I mean, that's the true hybrid that
I think it takes itself seriously. I think there's still a space to have a
whimsical version.
A whimsical, like the comparison to B movies is something that people crutch on, and I admit to crutching on as well, because like, what exactly is it about Resident Evil that's made you think of B movies? Well, you know, it's because I guess the dialogue is not the best voice acted in the world, and it's a little bit funny around the edges, but that's cool because it helps alleviate some of the tension, right?
Right.
Like that sort of stuff helps alleviate the tension from a scene that would otherwise be like just ridiculously scary, mm-hmm. right? You know, I'm the master of unlocking. It's like, really? That's kind of like awesome, ridiculous, and awesome. Oh, now I'm going to have to go fight a giant snake.
Yeah.
So, you know, I think that there's still space for that if you execute on it. And yeah, I still think there's space for it. I still think it'll work.
I do too. I just needs courage. It needs the courage to make that game again.
And unfortunately, I think part of the funny thing about 6 is that you ask, like, I think that everybody who wanted to got to make the game they wanted to with 6, if that makes any sense. Like, the producer got to make the game they wanted to. The designer got to make the game they wanted to. Capcom, PR, like Capcom, whoever gets the call shots got to make the game they wanted to. And everybody got to make this game, and it became this giant game of everything everybody wanted.
Mm. And it became something nobody wanted.
But think about all the jobs you created, huh?
Yeah, that's
right.
Good.
This economy. Anybody?
Just anyway, we can
kind of be involved in some way.
It brings me no joy to sort of rant for, you know.
You didn't rant. That's why I brought it back, because I wanted to talk about like what it could be like. We both liked it. Like Code Veronica, I love Code Veronica, and I was like trying to remember like why exactly I love Code Veronica so much. Well, so I think part of the reason I think that I love Code Veronica was there was so much of the ridiculous Resident Evil lore in it.
Yeah,
which was awesome. And then it had crazy cool characters. It's got to still have crazy cool characters. So, I mean, Resident Evil is another of those games that, along the lines of Metal Gear Solid, relies on having these, you know, graphic novel-like, really cool, larger-than-life characters, right? You got to have them. Mm-hmm. And I don't get a sense that Resident Evil has those so much anymore. Like, the last ones, like, the monks, maybe, in 4. Mm. There were too many of them. There wasn't like, you know, but there was the lead guy. I forget his name. Like he was, but he was like dark and
yeah,
they're just, where are those? Like, where's the tyrant?
Mm. Who's I just, see what you're saying.
You know, just kind of ridiculous. And anyway, Nicole, what have you been playing? We'll change the gears.
Oh, well, I mean, I don't want to rush you guys.
No.
I want you guys to get it out of your system.
It's out.
You guys feel better?
You know what I need to know?
I don't feel any better. I feel worse.
I'm torn as to whether I should play it.
You guys have not sold me at all about starting the series.
Oh, no.
No.
Oh, starting the series?
Well, I mean, I can't go back.
Categorically, every single person in the world who is a video game player should play the GameCube remake of Resident Evil. It is superlative.
And 4. 4 is a great one if you want to hop in and just play 4. You
can get 4 on HD.
On pretty much every console known to man, 4 came out on, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, recently too.
Yeah.
Yeah, and there's digital versions of Code Veronica. You can get Code Veronica X on your XBLA and PSN, which is also excellent. But
lots
really,
of good games.
You shouldn't miss one. One is, it's not even a long experience, and it is just, it's a great ride. It's a great, great ride.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be interesting to see what you think of it with your modern perspective.
My modern perspective. Well, I mean, was it Mikami who did Shadows of the Damned?
Yes, it was.
See, and that was one of my favorite games of 2010.
I loved wow, it. How did we never talk about that? I loved that game.
Yeah, no,
yes.
I tried to get everybody at work to play it and no one liked it.
Really? I tried to get everybody to play
it's
it too.
Fun.
I loved it.
It was awesome. It was so gotta see a fucking Hawkspur.
Yeah.
The best.
I loved it a little
he is
too
the best.
Much, but.
Yeah.
What do you mean I loved it a little too much?
Just a little bit.
I had a crush on Garcia.
I didn't have a crush on him.
Oh, okay.
But his demon slut girlfriend was awesome.
Yeah.
His demon slut girlfriend was the...
And then her head would fall off every now and then.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kind of into that.
Exactly. And then the actual like ending of it and finding out what the real story was like... Oh, shit, son.
Yeah, and then it's, like, it's a completely, it's not an unsatisfying ending, but it's like, here we go again.
Yeah, I'm like, oh, shit, son, you're in trouble now.
I love that game.
I love that game, too.
Yeah. Is it anything like Resident Evil and gameplay style? Okay.
So. No, I mean, like, so that's just completely tongue-in-cheek and fun and ridiculous.
Action-packed.
And silly and action-packed. And a beautiful version of what it is.
Awesome art style. The new DMC Devil May Cry art style kind of reminds me of it.
Yeah, there's parts of it that are like that. I definitely dig that.
In the Gamescom/TGS demo I played kind of had a lot of the same colors, except it was daytime.
But it does have the sort of purple weird, that is the weird alternate world thing
that
happens.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the like, oh, now I can see this grappling point that I can go jump off to. So like that sort of like emulates some of that sort of alternate world thing.
Yeah, and Dante's new attitude is kind of Garcia.
Dante's new attitude.
Yeah.
Dante's new attitude.
Is that your new band name? Dante's New Attitude?
that's my My Chemical Romance cover band.
Good one.
Yes. Anyway,
I'm playing Borderlands 2.
We have talked
that's a very good game.
We have talked that game to death, and I can still talk about it more.
I've only played a few minutes of it while I got my hair dyed. Pokemon Black 2. Same thing, guys.
You're like, I want my hair the color of this Pokemon.
No, I didn't. I like the foils in my hair and like the salon, and I have my DS, and everyone, all like the old ladies around me were just like, what is she going
All the old
on?
Ladies are like, she's got to catch them all.
They weren't encouraging. You'd think they would be, but no.
No?
Not at all.
They didn't want you to get the Charmander?
None of them are trainers?
Charmander is not in this version. I mean, he can be.
Duh, Garnet.
Afterward, if you transfer him over, but
Jesus
I mean.
Jesus Christ.
Let's
I
get
apologize
real.
For him. I apologize for him. He does not speak for all of us.
Oh dear.
Yeah, that's like red, blue, and yellow. So
what is it about the Pokemans that gets you
all
really?
Excited? We're gonna talk about Pokemon?
Let's talk about it. We never talk about Pokemon.
We never talk about Pokemon.
Oh man, this is weird. I don't know. I started playing it. It was my second Game Boy game. My first one was Link's Awakening, I think. And
what age were you?
Not that old. 8 or 9, 10 in that area. And then I got Pokemon.
Did you
Pokemon.
Ask for it? Or
yeah.
Did it just
I really wanted a Game Boy, and I really wanted to play Zelda, and it was the Ice Blue Game Boy Pocket bundle.
Nice.
Still have it.
That Ice Blue Game Boy.
Do you have any siblings?
Uh-huh.
Older or younger?
Younger.
Younger. So you were the older kid that had the DS.
The Geeky Corruptor
first.
For all of them.
Nice.
Yeah.
But also my other band, Geeky Corruptor.
Geeky Corruptor. It's just I'm writing this down.
We're opening for Dante's New Attitude.
Which, in my mind, is an 80s band, not My Chemical Romance. It's like 80s kind of New Order vibe.
I like it.
Uh-huh.
Really?
It's in my head.
Hmm.
Yeah.
How about my Geeky Corruptor?
I feel like that's that could be more like White Stripes kind of vibe.
Okay.
We'll talk.
All right. So, anyway, so you're 7 or 8.
I was thinking more like like They Might Be Giants.
She has never heard of that band. Right? You've never heard of that.
They're on K-Rock.
Oh, my God. That makes me feel so old. Istanbul's to Constantinople is to Istanbul.
They're not on K-Rock.
Istanbul's to Istanbul.
My Kiki corrupted her.
Yeah, you just corrupted her. Nicely done. Triangle Man, Triangle Man. No,
nope.
Nothing? Okay.
Triangle Man, back to Pyramid Head. I see where we're going with this.
It's all circular with triangles. Yeah. Go ahead.
Pokemon. I mean, I don't know what to say. I mean, I bought Pokemon Blue and Red, and I've bought in every version since then. And even then, it was this really formulaic game, and you got to
play it. Beautifully formulaic. I played them through Sapphire. I played Red, Blue, I played Yellow,
it's
Sapphire.
It's cute animals, it's turn-based violence. I mean, it's kind of had everything a 10-year-old me needed.
It's also classic old-school Japanese role-playing game formula, just applied to a marketable formula of animals and things.
And American materialism. I had to catch them all.
You got to catch them all. But the rest of it, it was all like all the training mechanisms, all the adventuring, all the going from town to town and talking to people and going to the right trainers and getting the right trainers to level up your Pokemon.
And the right items.
So what's the draw
Pokeballs
for the new version? Like, is it just different Pokemon?
Yeah. No, it really... Nintendo is very slow to adapt kind of new gameplay mechanics and new gameplay technology, which I know is so weird.
Nintendo?
I know, you'd think. But no. So basically... you know, a bigger backpack and running shoes and a bicycle so you go faster. And like I think bicycle is probably in the very beginning, but like running shoes is newer. And then like more space in your backpack, bigger inventory. Like these are the small additions that like have taken 10 years to implement. And even now, like the DS, for some reason, they didn't release Pokemon Black 2 as a 3DS exclusive, because had they, the sheep that I am would have bought it. But it's a DS game too, so I just use my DS. But like, they haven't really implemented anything that I would need to use the stylus for. I mean, I can open my backpack and click things. I mean, you really don't even need it to be on a DS. Like, they really haven't innovated
with it. Doesn't
even
need to be a game.
The series is not.
It could be on a Game Boy still. It could still be on a Game Boy Pocket.
I mean, that is... it is very much like the ultimate example of very tiny incremental design.
It's ridiculous. And I mean, I'm just.
Keep in mind, at one point.
It's the iPhone of games.
I'm a Mareep, if you will. Anybody? Anyone?
No, tell me what that is.
It's a sheep type Pokemon.
Oh.
Uh huh. So I was like, I'm a sheep.
I get it. I'm a Mareep.
Yeah.
She's a sheep type.
Silver. Pokemon Silver. I think that one was.
I admitted my ignorance.
Keep in mind, this is the series that, you know, for a long time would do series like Red and Blue, and the difference would be like 5 Pokemons that one had that the other didn't have, but you had to have both of them in order to get them all.
And I had a little brother, and he would always get the one that I didn't want, because that's just, I was the older, I was taller than him until I was like 10.
And that clunky old cable that nothing ever used.
And
that
then
cable.
For a while, once you got the Game Boy Color, there was like Silver and Gold, and you could mystery gift, and you would put the two Game Boys next to like this, like we can't see, but like facing each other without wires, and they would like transfer a berry across from the other to the other, and you could go to your house and you'd get a berry, and the berry would like be like 10 HP.
Is it Barry Manilow? That'd be cool.
It was not Barry Manilow. It was like a berry. Like it fell off a tree.
God damn it.
Yeah. They've stuck with the berry system.
Berry ever.
And actually, they've taken steps back in that they've implemented stupid things like the berries, where you can make like treats for your Pokemon.
Resident Evil has the berries. Never mind.
I don't get the berry thing. And now they have like beauty pageants for your Pokemon that you can do these. Like you give them like coffins or something. And there's judges in the game, and they're judged based on prettiness.
Do they like touch their hindquarters and see how taut they are?
No, they don't.
Do that again.
Which one?
The
prettiness.
They've just done some things that are awful for the series, but because I started playing so young and it was just, it's become a nostalgic thing that I'll play it forever.
Did you ever play the Pokemon trading card game?
I did not. I did not like the trading card game. Wow. But I really like Pokemon Snap, though.
Oh, really?
Oh, my God. Let's talk about Pokemon Snapshot, guys.
Yeah, let's.
Favorite level.
Level 2.
No.
2 for me, guys.
No, they're not numbered.
I know. I was meaning, I meant level B.
You remember Pokemon Snap, where you're on the island?
I didn't play Pokemon Snap. And you're,
oh,
on your Nintendo 64?
I did not play that game.
You can play the whole game in 45 minutes. And there's like, you, as you progress and earn points, and Professor Oak says things to you like, that was great.
Or, that does sound
I can
fun.
Double that for you. Like, all my photography skills that I've applied to Instagram, I learned from Pokemon Snap. Like, there are two of the same species. I can double your score for you.
Is that what Instagram knows you want it to say to you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I never played that game.
Oh, my God. Then be careful what you wish for. And probably be careful what you wish for. I can just imagine someone at Nintendo just light bulb went off, went, oh, my God.
Nintendo
Pokemon,
light bulb
Instagram.
Going off? I don't think so. And back when you could rent games from Blockbusters, you could bring your memory card in and print the really good photos you got from the like little kiosk at Blockbuster. And I could have like an actual copy
Did
of
you
like
do that?
Of like my Pikachu surfing on Lapras. Hell yeah.
Hell yeah. How many times in life are you going to get that photo?
No, right? And then if you use a Pokéflu, Pikachu will like have electricity. Oh, then there was surfing Pikachu. You could get specials.
Obviously.
Of course. And then like toward the end, in order to unlock Mew, which is the cutest, you have to take pictures of land formations that look like Pokemon. And then you'll be through the level and you're like, I did not notice that mountain looked like Dugtrio. And then you notice,
I know,
and then
right?
you felt ridiculous.
I do feel ridiculous right now. You are hardcore.
This is how I felt during the Resident Evil conversation, guys.
No, I'm, you know, turnabout is fair play.
Pokemon Stadium.
Team Rocket, yeah!
They're the bad guys. So
that's why I was just doing okay. that. Like, wow, the reaction was perfectly, I too. I was like, oh,
don't you know
they're
better?
The bad guys.
They're not. It's not Team Rocket anymore. It's the every game has these, like, this old evil corporation, and it's not called Team Rocket anymore. It's like Team Galactic and like Team Space Fighters. I don't know. I made that last one up, Bobs. But yeah, even that doesn't evolve. But Pokemon Stadium, let's go back.
I wish you guys could have seen the glares, though, when I did that. It was kind of awesome.
There were glares, guys. Dagger eyes come to mind. Like, daggers were coming out of your eyes. There they go again, guys. Maybe we'll make a gift for later. Pokemon Stadium. I still have my transfer packs, if anyone wants to play. So not only could you battle your Pokemon from the games in these, you know, 3D battles, which were awesome and turn-based and slow, and you could see all the moves and, like, somehow surf. The ridiculousness of Pokemon battles was, like, really emphasized in Pokemon Stadium, because in the game, it was, like, surf, and, like, a blue line would go across the Game Boy screen, and, like, you didn't think about how ridiculous that was.
Jeff, surf is an attack.
Got it.
It's a water move, but it's also a move that helps you go across large bodies of water. But in Pokemon Stadium, you would see a tidal wave go across the screen. You're like, that came out of nowhere, and then you had to, like, really think about yourself and, like, what you believed. Right?
It's magic of the Pokemon.
Yeah, but then you had to think about it. There were also mini games. You could play mini games and earn coins for the slot machines. Best part about it was that you could play the actual Game Boy game on your TV. Like, it had a port, so you could hold the N64 controller and you would play your Game Boy game as is, sprites and all. And you play.
So how is it?
That's first Transferring.
Transferring.
That's Transferring's origins. We need to give them credit.
Yeah.
How is it that you haven't fallen victim to Skylanders?
Yeah, that does seem like it's made for you.
Because I loved Insomniac Spyro's games. Like, loved them so much. The only game my sister would play with me, and like, it was like a bonding thing. And then they took away who Spyro was.
Well, but
they could have done that. Skylanders is Skylanders now. It's not Spyro Skylanders. They took away who Spyro was, and they made him something else, and they didn't need to, because
you really need to back away from that.
I don't understand the connection.
The stance is...
Spyro happens to be in Skylanders, but Skylanders is a whole bunch of...
It didn't start out that way. It was Spyro's game.
You're denying... Look at all the love that you have for Pokemon. You're denying that love.
Spyro was such a hero on his own. He saved little eggs, and then the egg would open, and then like a little baby dragon would come out, and sometimes like there'd be like bubbles because they were sleeping. Oh man, this is embarrassing.
I loved Spyro games too.
They were so great.
They were really great.
And I just feel like when you love something for what it is, it's Resident Evil. When you love something for what it is, and they change it completely, in this case, to make money, which is genius. I mean, Skylanders is
character
genius.
Adventure games, totally overlooked. Another one from that era, Jersey Devil. You ever played Jersey Devil?
I never played Jersey Devil.
Great overlooked game. Did you ever play Jersey Devil?
Is it related to the Jersey Shore, yes or no?
No, it's not
related to New Jersey Devils.
Not related to hockey either. God, you guys! Jersey Devil!
No, I'm sorry.
No, I didn't play that.
Did you play Medieval?
Yes,
played okay. Medieval.
I've been to Medieval Times. Go on.
All right, how about we...
The dinner is the show!
The dinner is the show. This is true. How about then this is the show. So we're going to take a little break. When we come back on the other side, I have no idea what other trouble we will get into, but we'll figure it out. Don't go anywhere. We'll be right back. And before we get away, we actually have an excellent music feature for you here. If you guys remember, longtime listener DJ Andy Reid, he's actually sat in once last summer here as well. Unfortunately, I wasn't here. He has a new full-length continuous DJ mix. Now, unfortunately, it's only available for you Canadians, but if you're up there in Canada, you can pick this up in the iTunes store now. It is Pure Ibiza 2K12. My feeling is just so right as we dance by the moonlight. Can't you see you're my delight? Lady, I just feel like I won't get you out of my mind. I feel love for the first time, and I know that it's true. I can tell by the look in your eyes. Obviously, Canada like goes full house.
You should have seen controller Micah just owning in there.
Totally owning it. Totally
he was going nuts. It was awesome.
Yeah, Pure Ibiza 2K12.
Pure energy.
That's Pure Ibiza. Pure Ibiza. Sorry, I have to say it the right way. Pure Ibiza 2K12 from Andy Reid in the Canadian iTunes store. All right. We started to talk a little bit about Borderlands 2. One of the things, though, that's been a big topic that has come up recently in a lot of forum discussions is the extent of fan service in these sequels, namely Borderlands 2 and Torchlight 2, both of which hold nothing back in terms of doing all kinds of crazy fan service stuff, whether it be, you know, Mutant Ninja Turtles or Minecraft heads. Right. Or whatever else.
But that's fun, especially in games that have a whimsical sense about them.
Well,
like those two.
There's some debate about that. So I just thought I would...
pronounce the H, man. Come on.
What's the debate? Some people are like...
Wheatens.
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 Weird.
Wheatens. Wheatens.
Wheatens.
Wheatens.
Wheatens.
Wheat.
I still don't hear it.
Kids.
Oh, we are
but what's
cause.
What's the debate? So there's a camp that's like, no, I want less fun things. Less homage to what we like. I hate the Ninja Turtles. Pizza's gross. Like, who are these people?
Communists.
There's a whole Top Gun mission.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, you light a volleyball net on fire. There's like tons of like references to greasing men up.
By the way,
who is this negative camp?
They even went so deep on that the character models of the guys that you fight them
they're Val Kilmer.
Are Val Kilmer, shirtless Val Kilmer in like khaki slacks running around with machine guns.
And
it's
then there's
amazing.
Dialogue, you are dangerous.
Bring it. Make more of that. I love that in WoW too.
Okay, so we love it. And I guess we're like, there's no room. You guys, you need to like keep up with the content on the internet so we can
now,
have these
listen,
discussions.
If that's in every game, that's a problem. But there are, in Borderlands, has a sense of humor, and it revels in its sense of humor. And if you're looking for,
but what about how much
serious...
it puts people off? I mean, look,
well, fuck those people. There's plenty of games that don't make fun of anything. Go, play, you know, Call of Duty and all. There's plenty of games that are serious. And if there was jokes in every game, yes, it would get tedious. But
I don't even think so. I think they're called games. Like they're supposed to be fun, and even the super serial ones can have, you know, Easter eggs, and that's
basically
what they
are. What if you don't get it?
Then it goes over your head, and then you don't have an opinion because you don't know about it.
I mean, I think that part of what goes on here is that Borderlands in particular is just carpet bombing with this stuff. It's around every corner.
But that's what it's about.
I know. I love it as well.
I understand why you don't like it, Garnet. Seems a weird position for you to take.
It's just weird, Garnet, that you would hate this game so much.
Weird.
I
just think Garnet's weird.
Is it a personal attack on Randy Pitchford? Because that's what I'm hearing.
Yeah, that's what I'm hearing. Defend yourself, Garnet.
What are your
thoughts? He's not even going to defend himself, boy.
Is it just that we can't have an intelligent discussion after 7 p.m.? I try to bring up like a real subject of the inclusion of fan service and pop culture stuff in these games. And it's been something that admittedly, most of the core fans have been super into. I totally love it. So I don't necessarily get it, which is why I wanted to discuss it.
I think Jeff Mattis made a great point last week, and it's something that I walked away thinking about. I think it was Jeff. Maybe it was Christian. Christian doesn't make good points.
It was a guy.
Yeah, it was one of the guys. Somebody was saying something about the fact that it potentially the problem might be that the jokes aren't necessarily jokes, that they aren't. It's not independent comedy that doesn't require an external source. It is referential comedy. It is a joke like, hey, remember that? Remember that other thing that we're all inside on and we know because we all live in the pop culture? Rather than being legitimately funny in its own right. And I can see how that might be grating after a while, just in the sense of like, oh my God, is it just going to be constantly referencing other things rather than making its own – being its own thing? And does it – make it less than by simply being referential rather than being creative? And I don't think so. I happen to think that kind of humor is pretty fun when taken in the context of lots of other things that are not funny and some that are funny in different ways. But every game doesn't have to not be that way. I can have a couple
every
of games.
Every game doesn't have to not.
Yeah, so I use a double negative, try to keep up. No, yeah, I mean, I think every game isn't that. So right. It's fun when a few games do that.
And maybe even it's not that it's annoying, it's that it becomes, if you're either part of the no or you're not, so there's like this exclusion factor, so maybe some people get the jokes, and there's a joke and someone doesn't get it, and then it becomes kind of like, why don't I get this? And then that kind of takes you out of the gaming experience. I could see that happening, where it's like, I don't know why this is funny, and now I'm not thinking about the game anymore. I'm
but
off
some of it
else.
Isn't, like the part that I don't get, and this is what I was hoping we bring that other side out, because the part that I don't get is that whether you get the Top Gun reference or not, the Top Gun mission is still fun. Whether or not you get
And it's a total side mission. It's not even like completely relevant to the main quest. It's a total side thing. You don't have to do it.
Yeah.
And you light a volleyball net on fire, and I think everyone can appreciate that.
Everyone can appreciate lighting volleyball nets on fire.
Just think about it.
Okay. All right, well, so we didn't really have much to discuss about that.
Well,
we're all on the same page.
I feel like we don't understand what the...
That's a good point. We don't understand.
Where the dislike comes from.
Yeah. And I read the reviews, and I read some of the dissent. I wonder about this. Do you think that when we as gamers read reviews that we think are silly, but still are in prominent positions, you know, like the Borderlands 2 reviews that brought this point up, does it make us try and get... Do we get overly analytic? Do we get overly, like... Like, do we turn the mirror back on ourselves too harshly and go, well, I wonder if there, and do some chin stroking. I wonder if there's any validity to that. I mean, maybe we are just being too referential, and maybe there are too many insider jokes in this. Instead of just enjoying it like we were before someone said, oh, I don't get it. I don't get your geek joke, and I feel weird.
Possibly.
And I could see that's where the complaints are coming from, which is, I don't get your geek jokes. This isn't funny to me. And then it becomes an issue. But I think that a lot of the referential humor comes from the badass challenges, and like there's one where like if you jump on all the five couches you get the FYO couch achievement or badass achievement or something, and I just think that if maybe some people don't like that there's those callbacks are cluttering the gameplay experience, because there's definitely a lot more going on because of these funny comments. I don't know. I love them.
I love them.
I'm trying to be devil's advocate here, but I absolutely adore every single one. And there's
all right,
a Konami
so I'll throw
code
that whole
one,
conversation.
And it does nothing. It like opens up a mode that hasn't been unlocked.
We'll just throw the whole conversation away. I love, by the way, we talked a ton about Borderlands. I absolutely love what they're doing with their code system. I think it's going to be... I think the shift code system is potentially the herald of a new sort of... community interaction tool. I can't believe no one's come up with it before, and it's super ingenious. It works incredibly well with this game. I don't know if it would work with every game, because it is obviously tied into the loot system here, right. Which is brilliant.
So correct me if I'm wrong, because I'm not too familiar. I keep seeing Randy tweet all these codes, and at first I thought they were just normal Xbox Live PSN codes where you have one chance to redeem them. And then, so now I'm hearing that there's a separate shift account that you create with Gearbox, link it to your Xbox Live account, and then throughout the day, he will send these codes out, and they can be redeemed for a certain amount of time, up to 1,000 times?
Well, it depends. Like, they have ultimate control over these codes. So here's the way it works. If you have Borderlands 2, and whenever you are in the main city of... Not Pandora.
Sanctuary.
Sanctuary. always get confused with Pandora. Pandora is the planet, world.
Yeah.
Sanctuary is the city. So whenever you're in Sanctuary, the spot that you spawn into is this little room that has a fast travel station and a chest that has a magic lock on it. The keys to open that lock come from codes that you get for this shift program. Now, when you're at the main menu, if you go into options and go down to the shift menu, I believe it's in options, you can sign up for a free account. It's their way of getting you to join them and start doing data tracking, and they're going to data mine you.
If you already have a Gearbox account, is that something separate? Because I have a Gearbox account, and on my birthday, they sent me an email saying happy birthday. It was automated, but I loved it. And I was like, Gearbox, I will buy your games forever.
You can probably link it up.
Okay.
And this is not only a Xbox thing. If you're playing on PC, then you can use your Steam account to link your Steam account into your Shift account. If you're playing on PlayStation Network, same thing. If you're doing on Xbox.
So in theory, if you have Xbox and Xbox Silver, you can't use these keys?
Well, right, because you wouldn't have the online. Well, I don't know where they would work on Silver.
That could be a bummer.
I don't know if they might. They probably would still work on Silver, I guess. You'd be single player, but there's nothing that would limit you from getting the code off the internet because the codes are independent of Live or anything else. So this is a secondary network that you create an account for. You're not like logged into or anything like that, although I'm sure that they're doing some player tracking and data tracking and all that kind of stuff on your play sessions. And then they can give you codes and you go in and you'll get a free key. First of all, as soon as you sign up inside the game, you'll get a key so you can go unlock the chest. And people were like, oh, don't unlock the chest because the chest gives you a couple of rares based off of your level. And then you have to have another code to open it the next time. But here's what's cool is that they've been relatively generous in giving out codes. And in giving out codes, all they're doing, like from a marketing standpoint, it's a genius. Every time Randy gives out a bunch of codes, there's a bunch of people tweeting about Borderlands and like talking about how much they love the game. And oh my God, I just got this. And oh my God, I just got that. And at the same time, it's perfect for a loot game because you get more new cool stuff. And it gives them the option to do like, some of the things they've talked about doing are, well, we can have a fan event now. And when you come to the fan event, we can hand out cards with a code on it. And it can be like a special code that
you
get
stuff. E3, right?
That's what they did. Well, no, at E3, what they did was, when you played the PC version, you got it. I don't know. Maybe the code does unlock.
I think it's
is it a shift code?
Way, yeah. It was like a special weapon that
it's the weapon that you got.
So you got supposedly.
A weapon. Yeah. So in that playthrough, you got a gun. Because keep in mind, there's so many combinations of guns that every time it rolls up a gun for you, so to say, that who knows what the hell you're gonna get.
Right.
And then they had it to where it would spit out a code, and they wrote down the code on a piece of paper. Actually, I have one of those from the.
Me too. I haven't redeemed it yet either.
What are you playing on PC?
Huh?
It's only on PC. That's only valid on PC.
Are you sure?
Yes. Yeah, that was part of the deal.
That particular code. Yeah, I got a gold key because I pre-ordered.
Yep.
So like I'm holding on to it, and so now that I know that I can get more shift codes. But Randy, like he tweets at the most like awkward times. Like I'm not on my computer.
Well, yeah, and you have to be.
That's
able to,
me being upset.
So they were doing them as load tests, but the idea now that he just tweeted something about this on Wednesday or Tuesday on Wednesday is that now that they have the system up and running, they're going to be able to do them. In different ways and with higher frequency. So they can now like post them on Facebook and have them active for a period of time. And then everyone can go redeem them. And it's just a great way to like keep engaging people, and it's costing them nothing.
Yeah. And
they're just
engaging
making,
and keep rewarding.
They're forcing the game to roll up something cool for you to have to play and have more fun in their game. You know?
Yeah.
I don't know if it's sustainable, like I said before, but I think that what they did to make 2 by going through and following the oldest formula in the book really, really worked. They just made everything cooler and bigger and more awesome.
Agreed.
And having gotten to the point where like Aaron and I, the game is ridiculously long.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying that in a bad way. I'm saying it like as someone who loves the content, I'm loving the fact that we are still like just charging through stuff and it keeps throwing new stuff at it. The ebb and flow of like feeling like your weapons are getting bad, I have a really bad spot with my weapons, and then finally it's like something happens and you opens up again.
It's a purple
and you're a badass and you're like, oh thank God I'm a badass again. And you have like a run where you're a badass and then shit, it's getting hard again, and it's such a good really, really like it.
Yeah,
we don't need to talk more about Borderlands, but I thought the shift thing was worth talking about. I think that's a really cool social interaction tool, and
could it be used for other games outside of loot? Like, what? How else could that be implemented?
I think that
guns is obviously easy.
Guns, especially here, because the game is set up around a system that like rolls up combinations of things, and you get magic toys.
Yeah,
so I can see games. Any shooter could implement this. I mean, we can see Call of Duty implementing this, Medal of Honor.
Certainly, role playing games could do it too.
Well, you could do
any games with items, really.
any games with items, anything with customization. I mean, like, even if you're in a world where you're trying to, like, let people earn different pieces of armor or whatever.
Yeah.
Ezio can have a blue cape now. Like, I mean, it could be Ezio. Connor.
You know, you're talking about Halo. Like, in Halo, it could be you get special, unique pieces of insignia that you can use to make your team
emblems,
insignia or whatever. Emblems. You know, armor pieces might be a little more difficult because then you're talking about full-on modeling stuff. But as long as it's something that's like a stencil, you know, that's not too hard to add. What else could you do?
I mean, I think any...
Could it be bigger than inventory? I mean, is that too much? Like maps and characters? I mean, on a smaller scale.
It could be whatever you want it to. I mean, really, it could be whatever you want it to.
It's the unicorn.
And that's what's cool about it. And I think that it's that the idea of... I think it's another example of how young the idea of interacting with people in their day-to-day social network world while they're in games is just how immature that whole idea is. Because someone comes along and does something like so simple like this. Oh, I give you a code on Facebook and you can add something in your game. And you're like, holy shit, this is awesome.
Yeah.
And, you know, like a year from now, it could be something much more intricate or at least or, you know, more involved. I don't know.
Or it could be like pieces of a puzzle that you have to use to solve.
See, now we're talking about some cool stuff. Yeah. I love the idea of eventually being able to get adventure games where when I'm not in front of the console, there are still things I can do to interact with the world. And I really, 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 really want that. Fez says hi.
You know, there's...
But you're still playing the game, like you're talking about the QR code thing. And
the sort of language and all.
Yeah,
what else in, like, the secret world where, I mean, that game didn't work, but... So some of the aspects of going on to Google and learning about some ancient dude so you could apply that to a puzzle to open a room and kind of continuing to play the game in the real world so you can apply it to your game at night.
I want to play an Uncharted where I have a app on my phone that's Drake's Diary. And when I learn things in the game, they go into Drake's Diary. And when I'm on my lunch break at work, I can open Drake's Diary and have... And look and, you know, explore maps and look at intelligence reports. And
I completely agree. I think that'd be cool.
And then be able to take that information and find things in the game, secret rooms that you would never have been able to
find otherwise. And because whatever the accounts were that are linked, then while I'm doing stuff, I just like say send a game or even like it's just even synchronized. I shouldn't even have to send a game. It should be just synchronized right off the bat. And when I close my session, or whatever, it just syncs back up. And when I go back to play my game, all the stuff that I did inside my app on my phone that was my diary is now synced into what's happening in the game.
Yes.
I want that. I've been wanting that for like forever.
What needs to happen for that?
Well, actually,
Smart Glass.
Here's the thing. I was having lunch with Amy Henning a while back ago and talked to her about this idea because I'm super, I'm actually super serious.
I've already pitched this.
I totally did pitch this.
It's called Nate's Journal.
It's
going to cost $1.99.
Here's the difficulty in making that happen is that you're already talking about a game that requires so much resource to create, right? Yeah, you're talking about the Uncharted one is the one that's near to my heart, so we'll just keep talking about that. You've already got a huge team that's committed to making it. There's already an abundance of material. It's like so much so that you're having to cull down and you can't get everything you wanted to into the game in the first place. And on top of that, everything that you're doing in the game is so important to it all coming together. You would need to do it internally to make it work right because all of these things that you're talking about are core, canonical, important pieces of the game. They're not something that you can just do willy-nilly. They're really, really important parts of the narrative structure, of the history and background of the characters, of the history and background of the place and what's going to happen in the story. And because of all those things, then that means that it has to be done internally. Well, that means that there have to now be people on the internal teams to do those things, which means that now your team that was already big, that already had too much to do in the first place, now has a whole nother thing to do. And it's not even
inside
the game.
I have a way to solve that. No multiplayer. Those people can be, from the very beginning, making this game, from the very get-go of designing the narrative, which I know video game narratives aren't put together the way we think they are. It's not like in chronological order. It's kind of just as the design happens. But from the very beginning, you have the idea, the concept for the iPhone or the mobile companion, and you're integrating that as you go. And instead of focusing a team to multiplayer, you're focusing a team to this. And you charge for this. You want to charge for the online pass. instead apply that to the mobile game and don't force me to play multiplayer, force me to do this interactive thing that I'm going to do because I'm on my iPhone all day, but I'm not going to play the multiplayer.
Preach. I'm with you.
Okay.
I'm with you.
The other I'm shaking thing is, my fist.
You know, although I mean, I've been thoroughly corrected, you know, multiplayer in Uncharted has been successful. Right. It hasn't been earth-shatteringly successful, but it has certainly been a reward. It has certainly rewarded the effort that they put into it, which is awesome because they put a lot of work into it and they did put a big, you know, commitment against doing multiplayer correctly and it worked out and there's still a lot of people who play it, still support it. You know, they just recently did more updates to it. So, mm-hmm. you know, I understand now why it's so difficult to make something like this happen. I just wish that there was a game and obviously it wouldn't be Uncharted now because of where they're committed, but I wish there was a game that would make a commitment to do this because I just think that it would be an amazing, amazing thing. There's so many cool things you could do with it, but it would, I think she's right. Like she pointed, like she was released, like obviously it's Amy. She knows all this stuff, but you can't take this as here's a design doc. Here's what we want to have done. And then hire someone to build this thing for you. And at the same time, not doing that means that you've got to go find experts at building mobile apps and all of the production and back end team to get it done. And it's just another big arm that you have to add to your development team.
Well, to make your dream a little, you know, to hurt a little more. I mean, how perfect would that be in The Last of Us? In such a solitary game where those characters would totally keep journals.
Amazing.
Yeah. I'm even thinking of games that have, like a game like,
Resident Evil 6.
Pokemon Snap.
Like Assassin's Creed, where you have, at least in the last few versions, Ezio has his estate that you're sort of managing and adding to and buying and selling. And you can have all of that be stuff that you can access on your mobile device.
Absolutely.
And so you can sort of be playing this economic version of the game that ends up helping you in your single-player campaign because you've been
and what
buying
if every
and
time-
selling...
Okay, that's awesome. And what if, also in Assassin's Creed, what if every time you came to one of those icons that shows you the stray memory left in the animus, instead of it just giving you this quick, hard-to-decipher logic puzzle,
it sends it to
it
your
gave
phone.
You a super hardcore, like, Professor Layton-ass
Yeah, and that would be super
problem.
Awesome because
Professor Layton-ass.
It would play on the sort of time travel element of it.
Yes.
Like, you can access your phone in now time.
In now time. In the real world, you're playing this.
Yeah, and in the, you know, in whatever, 16th century, whatever it is that we're now doing. It's
well, the weird balls. Thing is that this is, I feel like, an accessible idea, an idea that could happen now. And Gree is developing an Assassin's Creed game that's basically Assassin's Creed meets Farmville. And you're micromanaging this town, and you use the upgrades to do, like, these turn-based battles. And it's not going to be connected to the console game at all. And it's like, what a waste of where we are technologically. Like,
yeah, I agree.
And it takes place like 100 years before Assassin's Creed. Like, I don't need that game experience, but here's one that isn't too much of a stretch from that and could offer so much more to the game.
Yeah, I totally think that would be really cool. And I think it's better than trying to shoehorn console-style experiences onto the phone. Do something that the phone already does well, but make it relate to that world so that there's a handshake back and forth of stuff that you do in the single-player game on your console or on your PC helps you in the on the mobile end and vice versa. I think that'd be really
the back-end services to make this stuff happen clearly are there. It's not a problem to
make
that part
happen.
I mean,
this is what they were talking about, like, freaking, you know...
Velocity Girl?
Yes! And Forza was like, you're going to be able to trick out your
but on
car.
The whole, yeah, I mean, that's certainly stuck with me even back then. And it's something I've thought about tons and tons and tons. But I certainly have a much clearer understanding, having discussed it at great length. Like, it's a huge...
undertaking.
It's a huge undertaking because of how big of an undertaking these games already are.
Yeah.
And what it would take to make it happen. Mm-hmm. So, and then how do you...
Hire more people.
I don't understand why you can't hire an app developer to work hand in hand with you.
Well, here's the next part. Another piece of this that figures into the equation is, so in a game like Uncharted, where so much of it is built around the narrative structure, you know, Amy writes most of that stuff. Like, she writes all of that stuff. She doesn't have time to do a whole nother set. Like, this is more narrative content that someone
hire
has.
Hire more people.
But the whole thing is, like, that creator, whether it be Amy or someone else in someone else's game, is not going to say, you know what, all that part of that's really cool about, you know, here's the canon book. You just figure out how that stuff's going to work. Yeah, They're never going to let that happen because it's their creative baby.
Right.
But that they're already so committed to so many things. Like, they need to be there making sure that all of the dialogue is getting done right. And they need to be there with the level designers and making sure the levels are flowing, the way the characters are acting inside them, are doing things that they are all acting within behaviors that make sense within their characters. And then they have to go to the, you know, to the motion capture stage, the overseal. There's just not enough time and bandwidth to get it all done. But I would love to. But
we're only gonna get more and more demanding as gamers, and technology is only gonna get better and weirder and more bizarre, and let us do more. So I mean, that time management's gotta be. There's gotta be a solution to that.
Well, I'm a very creative person. If someone out there ever wants to let me do it, I would love to do it. I have this huge dream.
Amy,
I would love to. She's not gonna do it. But I would love to see it. I would love to see it. I mean, think of how fun it would be to be able to do that. Like, oh, there's just so many cool extensions of it. So many cool.
And it's funny because it's on a different plane. It's kind of what the Wii U is trying to do, and they're just doing it so wrong. The Wii U tablet's not really offering anything. It's just,
well, it doesn't disconnect. It doesn't go away with you.
Right, but I mean it doesn't offer you those kind of journal entries, that extra insight into the game. It doesn't offer you those things. It's kind of just like an extended controller.
Well, I think
it has the capability
to be seen.
More.
I think that we'll see more innovative. I hope that we'll see more innovative things with the Wii U as it.
Your optimism's adorable.
Aww. Whatever happened to the Guild Wars 2 iOS? Remember, like, that thing that they showed at PAX a couple of years ago? Do you not remember this? Guild Wars 2 was going to have an iOS app that was a interactive map of the server that you're on, and you could like log in through your Guild Wars account and
see
your
that.
Friends, and like you'd be able to chat with your friends, and you'd be able to say like, oh, cool. Hey, you could see like where they were on what part of the world, where they were, what they were doing, and say, oh, hey, I'm on my way home from work. I'll
That's
be there
awesome.
In like 20. Whatever happened to that?
That is super awesome. They should make that.
They were making it. They demoed it at PAX, not last PAX, but the PAX
idea.
Before that. And it was really, really cool. I mean, obviously, as long as Dallin's gone, it must have been a, you know, like creative mock-up, but it was a really, really cool creative mock-up. It was a very good idea. I'm surprised. There's another piece. Why is that not happening in all MMOs, especially not with people getting back into Pandaria, which I'm stunned by how many people. Have you read Billy's
a million new
gushing over Pandaria?
Yeah,
he's gushing over Pandaria. He's like, this is the best.
It's still sitting on my counter because I got two. I got a banana and an apple and an orange that have
this is
really
the
taken a lot of time away from me in a great way. I promise you guys, next week you're gonna hear positive Jeff.
Positive Jeff.
Yeah, some of those fruits are game of the year.
So anyway, I wish Billy was around because he got back into Pandaria, or Pandaria as we like to call it, the bakery. And says it's, you know, he's been tweeting about how it's the best quest content that they've done. There's people who are loving it, just got into the first raids and think that it's fantastic content. And I'm kind of a little bowled over.
Yeah. Well, yeah. They're pretty darn good at making that game now.
And it's an expansion that it's a different art style. It's a different world. Yeah. It's a different, everything about it is just so different from what they've done that even if it was fundamentally the same type of quest, it looks so different that you think you're playing something brand new.
Yeah,
really? And there's like a Nimbus mount, and you can like fly around on a cloud, like you're a Goku.
Really tough following Goku. Cataclysm, because Cataclysm was such a big world event. It was such a big deal to the World of Warcraft world. And then they come in now with pandas, and so obviously it didn't sell as well. And then as soon as we saw like all that reaction, it's like, oh, it must be falling off. And then as people started playing it, suddenly it's like, oh
I forgot this was crack.
Well, and like, I don't feel like it's fair to say that it didn't sell as well, because I feel like you can't, the WoW that was the only MMO in the market isn't that anymore. And I mean, you look at something like SWTOR and you think, good MMOs, you can't stay a good MMO forever. And to have the kind of staying power that WoW has, like, I think it's totally unfair to say, like, that Pandaria wasn't a success. Maybe, what was that?
That was
my
stuff.
Oh, man.
Really?
Yeah. Oh, wow. That was you just had three giant pieces of pizza.
I did. I guess I'm still hungry.
I think you're just excited to play as a panda.
That was my rumbly and my tumbly for pandas.
You should play Tokyo Jungle, because I'm sure it's got pandas in there. Actually, we should talk about Tokyo Jungle. Why don't we do this? We'll take a break before we do the final segment. We'll come back and do a final segment. We'll talk about some Tokyo Jungle. We'll talk about Cliff leaving Epic.
What?
I know, right?
Crazy pants.
Total crazy pants. And we'll do finishing moves and then some football and then we'll go home.
Sounds
so stick
good.
Around. We'll be back for the last segment of Week in Confirmed. right back, ready to wrap this sucker up. Hey, you know, we didn't talk about Torchlight 2. I started Torchlight 2.
And?
It's Diablo 2.
What class are you playing?
It is Diablo 2.
It is so Diablo 2. The music, by the way, the music is like a variation on the theme of Diablo 2. I'm like, this is the music. Yeah. I'm like, wow, this is like, I didn't piece it together for a minute, but I'm like, holy crap, this is the freaking Tristam music.
It's so funny.
So bizarre.
I don't know if you saw the TRS episode when we talked about it, but both my co-hosts on that show, their first Diablo was Diablo 3. And so they keep comparing it to Diablo 3. And I kept going, Diablo 2.
No, it's Diablo 2.
Diablo 2.
Like, dun, 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 dun. I'm like, oh my God, I know this music. I'm like, what the hell is going on here? I am the, gosh, their names are so hard to keep up with. The
pistol guy?
Yes.
The Outlander.
Yes. I'm the Outlandish.
Yeah.
I'm the Outlandish.
I'm playing an engineer. I think I told you already.
No, you didn't.
Yeah. Playing an engineer with Mr. Peepers.
Engineer looks cool because they use the powered up weapons.
Yeah.
Which looks cool.
He's
and I like
bald and has a sweet stash.
You know I had to do a girl.
Right.
You know I was
doing. You gotta look at the butts.
Yeah, of course. And they get way cooler costuming. A lot of times.
No offense, Nicole.
Way better
way
outfits.
Way cooler outfits.
Let's
way better
talk about shoes, guys.
Way better hair.
Shoes.
Let's get some shoes.
Shoes.
Dude, seriously, their boots are always better. Okay? They have heels.
Their boots are made for
number
walking.
Number one, they
That's
have boots
what they're gonna do.
That have excellent heels, and they always get like, you know, like cool brass buttons and snaps and laces and stuff. Like, dude boots are always like flat-soled. I look like I just trod through a bunch of war or whatever. It's awful.
Right. There's we've no already style. Talked about this too long.
What? It's the truth.
I'm not disagreeing with you. Okay, so so it's Diablo 2 and it's fun. That's the problem with Torchlight. It's like, what's there to talk about? It's fun. Play it. It's kind of like Borderlands the same way for me. It's like,
I guess.
What is there to talk about?
Well, I can say a couple of things. Number one, just from a functionality standpoint, it is, to my like move sensibilities, better tuned to my movements than Diablo 3 is. Like, I feel like the way it responds, like, okay, for the people who make fun of these games as click simulators, if you just boil them down to being click simulators, I think Torchlight 2 is a better click simulator than Diablo is a click simulator. From how it responds to the click inputs and like how easy I find it to target the targets I want to target. By the way, control is the new shift key. Especially for ranged. For ranged characters, yeah. Like, so do you know what I'm talking about?
It stops you from moving.
But it doesn't stop. So shift used to just root you in place and you would fire, but it ignored range. Mm-hmm. So control is awesome because now control takes into account the range for your ranged weapon.
Right, moves you into
range.
And
it moves you just close enough to shoot and then locks you there. It's fucking awesome. I'm like, how did I ever live without this? How did I ever live without control move? I mean, control move back in the, you know, back on the...
Warcraft.
Yeah, it was like attack Starcraft. Move. It's like, so it's like exactly the same. They figured out attack move, but it's even better. I go exactly how close I need to and then attack. It's awesome. I'm like, I love this. So there's that. And then the other thing is that paying attention to just the style and character of the game... I think that, so it's hard to say. Diablo has, like, Diablo 1 and 2 were of a different era of visual fidelity. So the fact that they were
sprites.
They were, right. And the fact that they were rather, like, they took their dark, demonic stuff serious was still seen through a lens of sprites and, you know, 800 by 600 resolution.
Yeah.
And that's even in the expansion pack. And even before that, 640 by 480. And so there was like something lost there. Whereas you go to Diablo 3 and it's pretty, but it's not as evocative to me. And I'm not saying that Torchlight 2 is particularly evocative, but it's just sort of, I don't know. It's just sort of fun. I just like the look of it. It's
you
sort
like
of
that cartoony look. Is what
I
saying.
Do. I guess I like. I don't want it to be totally cartoony, but I like I really like the character, the atmospheric character that Torchlight 2 has. I liked Titan Quest a lot too. Did you play Titan Quest?
I did.
I really like Titan Quest a lot too, and I think it sort of captured a similar sort of vibe.
Yeah.
And then on the like, if you're gonna go more detailed look, I thought that Sacred 2 really did a nice,
I was just gonna
nice
bring that up.
Job with that. I mean, to me, Sacred 2 was better at Diablo
Such
3.
Such an overlooked game.
Sacred 2 was better at Diablo 3 than Diablo 3 as a Diablo 3. I didn't even think about it.
I don't know about that.
Sacred 2, huge game, great detail, tons of customization.
Much more pure role-playing game than Diablo.
Much
is.
More pure role-playing. You're right. It's more a pure role-playing
game. Fantastic. I think that was one of my very first Kanata Fords. It's such an overlooked gem.
You can still get it on Steam.
It's great.
And it's awesome. Yeah. It is a really, really good dungeon crawler.
Yeah.
Even, you know, I don't know.
And that's a game that has some fun, whimsical joke moments, too, in very serious game.
Definitely.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Like that, that quest where you get to make assemble that rock and roll band, and then it triggers this massive cutscene where they rock.
Very European.
Yeah, it's awesome.
Very European. So I don't know. I mean, that's you're right. There isn't a whole lot more to say than that. I think the skill system is, for anyone who wanted more out of a skill system than what Diablo 3 brought to the table, this is...
See, I like Diablo 3's skill system. I think that's the one thing I find lacking in just because where they changed the rules was...
You find it lacking in Torchlight 2?
Not lacking, but
there's so many options.
There's a ton of options to the point of... I find myself flummoxed of like, where do I even put this point? I just level up. Where do I even put it? So many options. But
I kind of like having all those options. Okay, keep going.
No, I hear you. And there's a certain joy to that. But the fluidity and the way that moving my skill set around in Diablo 3 completely changed my play style. And
I'll
being able
that.
To experiment freely and go, oh, here's a loadout that I really yep. dig. Oh, but I just got this new thing. Now I'm going to change my loadout massive. That level of creativity and feeling like I can really sculpt the experience that I want within my own class even without having to change classes is pretty special.
I have to agree. Same thing that I like in Borderlands 2. Small fee, boom, respec, no big deal. Shouldn't be a big deal ever. So, I don't know.
It's a great game.
There isn't a whole lot more to say
bucks,
about that.
Unbelievable. It's unbelievable that there's that much game for $20.
Are you playing it single? How much of Torchlight 2 have you played?
Not as much as I would have liked, but you know, I played a lot of it.
Were you playing it single player, or were you
mostly.
Playing it connected
yeah,
online?
Yeah, actually completely single player. I haven't
and
played
it's interesting
any.
Because they're another one who did their friend system through an external, so you port out, you have a runic account. The runic account lets you draw in your friends from Facebook, and then it can shoot them back into the game, which was kind of, it seems like a multi-step process, but it seemed to work.
That's good. That was the big desire from the first Torchlight was to have multiplayer or to have co-op. And now that they've got it, I haven't done it. So I really should. I really want to.
I really, really appreciate the layers of depth that they put into the skill system. Mm-hmm. So I really like that. And there's a lot of tons of options.
Lots of opsos, right? Am I right?
You couldn't be any more right about the Los Opsos.
Right. Yeah.
Great breed of dog, very friendly. If you have allergies, it might be a bummer, but other than that...
Total bummer.
All right.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to get into it again, but this is another one of those games that has absolutely zero explanation of how its front end works when you start the game. Why do people misunderstand me about that?
I don't think they misunderstand you.
They do misunderstand me. They keep saying, you want a hand-holding level. I don't want a handhold. I really don't want a handhold. I want to have to play the game.
You want clarity.
I just want clarity of how it works, right? You know, it's like, I remember Torchlight, so it just took me a minute. And look, I get it. The argument is, we'll just play the game. Okay, so I did. I played the game, and you know what? After a half hour, I'm playing the game, and it's all fine. But instead of it taking a half hour, it could have taken 30 seconds.
You know it does a great job of that, actually? Banana? Amazing at it.
Wait, which one was banana? Yeah. No, I remember. I remember which one banana was. High in potassium.
Which one's banana?
Banana is a fruit that he's loved for a long time.
Oh, really? Yeah. Well, that's good because banana needs to do that because
right,
the people who will think that like, that's that game that's going to be really hard to get my head around.
Exactly.
There's so many things to think about.
Exactly.
It's a game that I'm already apprehensive about because I feel like it's bigger
banana.
Than I am.
Please, banana. Please play banana.
But you think
banana
that it, does it hold your hand? Because I do
bunches.
Want holding.
You do want hand holding.
I do want hand holding in that type of fruit.
Yeah.
I mean, you really do need to use your hands.
Well, I mean, I think that's...
Put your hands on the banana. How many times do I need to tell you?
It's interesting, mate, because I think that, there's a comparison to be made to games like Civilization. And if you tried to sit down and play a game of Civ without a degree of
right.
of explanation of how the systems work, then you would be really lost. And it would be really easy to say, well, dude, there's just too much there. Go read a FAQ or go read a wiki and figure out how to play it. But, you know, the Civ games have done a pretty good job of explaining, like, here's how you go.
Especially Revolution. Revolution did a fantastic job.
Revolution was excellent at it, right?
Yeah.
So I won't sit here and beat the you know, some of you guys get it. You've
the
responded.
Banana.
Banana gets it.
Banana gets it.
Banana gets it. And that's, yeah. And, you know, I'm trying to think of something I could say that, like, if you haven't already figured out which one banana is.
No, you don't need to. Tune in next week.
Tune in next week.
Next week's going to be a very, very positive show. I'll just
anyway, I lost my train of thought. Oh, I'm not going to beat that. I'm not going to beat that subject anymore. But I just don't get it. Like those of you who think I want my handheld, I don't want my handheld. I just think that here's what it boils down to. This is something I remembered. I just wanted to say what it boils down to for me is that, and you may call me, and I don't have a counter argument because I think that this is true. You can say that I'm a lazy gamer or whatever, but I don't want to have to study how to play every game I sit down to play. The best game to me is a game that I sit down and pick up the controller or sit down at the mouse and keyboard and start playing. And in an hour or two, I'm totally lost and engrossed in the game because it's taught me how to work in its world. And then I'm playing the game.
But isn't that interesting that you and I both grew up in the era when you bought a game and you came home and you read the instruction manual.
The first night you sat down with a 50-page manual
and I've never done
and
that.
Read it and read it.
And
read
had
it.
had you not done that, you would have not been able to play
Holy
said
shit,
game.
Dude. I remember like coming home with Baldur's Gate and immediately like just like opening
and
the box.
And there was a joy to that. There was a joy to that.
I don't know about that.
But,
there
I mean,
was.
Was there?
If a game, if you can't figure out how to play a game from playing it in an hour, isn't there like a fundamental flaw in the way the game's made? Like how come, why is that that you
well,
guys don't?
Well, that didn't used to be the case. It used to be the case.
Why?
It used to have been the case that a game was more like a board game or a, I don't know, something else where there's a sport where there's a rule set that you read and learn, and then there's the game that you play having learned it.
That's exactly what it is. Is like the two were completely divorced of one another.
Right.
You learned all of the systems of how to play the game, and then you turned it on and started the adventure.
Nobody expects you to be able to walk onto a basketball court with a basketball and just figure out how to play it. Right? You have to know how to play.
Because I don't know how to play basketball. Funny you should say that.
Well,
would NBA 2K13 teach me? Is that how it starts out? It assumes you have a basic concept of basketball?
It assumes you totally know how to play basketball and at a pretty high level.
I don't play a lot of sports games.
But I mean, and nobody would expect you to open a box of Monopoly and be able to just learn by playing.
That's a trick question statement because no one actually knows how to play Monopoly. But in
free
game,
parking is totally supposed to fill up with money.
But all I know is that I want a Pasco. But in a game like Baldur's Gate, where you did need the manual, do you think that one of the reasons people don't anymore is because games kind of follow a lot of the same rules, the same expectations? Like I know the basic rules of an RPG.
I
know what the sword does. I know, and most games
but that
follow
doesn't,
the Unreal
that doesn't
Engine
account
controls.
For the person who's not played a game that's their first RPG they pick up. You know,
right?
Sure, but even in fantasy culture, you know certain things about dragons. You know certain things about fire and witches and whatever it is.
But you don't know what the character system they've chosen is. I mean, you don't know what their internal you don't know what their character stat system is going to be. You don't know what their skill system is going to be. You don't know what their experience system is going to be. You don't know what their combat system is going to be. There's all these pieces of how am I building my character and how does my character interact with the world that there are a number
also,
of ways to tackle.
You never where games came from at that time. I mean, you didn't walk up to Pac-Man and get the Pac-Man tutorial level. And you also didn't sit down to a game of Dungeons & Dragons and get the Dungeons & Dragons tutorial level.
Well, Pac-Man's different, though. I mean, there are some games. Look, if a game can be explained in a couple of sentences very simply, then that's one subject entirely, right?
Mm-hmm.
But if it takes more than that.
You're just going to let that go?
I'm going to push
the volume
iOS
down button, and then it'll stop vibrating.
His phone's ringing if you can't.
I just iOS 6'd it.
Oh, nice.
Is that a thing?
iOS 6'd
it. Yeah, you put it on don't disturb, do not disturb.
No, I pulled up the text message back.
Oh, the auto text.
And
yeah, that's
auto
pretty
text
cool.
Message back.
How do you do that exactly?
You can do that?
Yeah.
Yeah, it's cool. You have to have one of these special phones.
Do I need a manual to figure it out?
Nope.
Or is it intuitive and will I learn?
You just flip the little phone piece up and it like gives you a list of text messages you can send back. Now you've had your two iOS 6 moment. And we've lost our...
No, what you were saying is that the game is simple enough.
So the game is simple enough that you can be explained.
I agree. It was a
right
stupid comment.
I mean, it's like Words with Friends. So all I can...
But you have to get Scrabble in order to know how to play
Words.
You kind of do.
Jeff, I can explain Scrabble in two sentences.
Right.
You have 7 tiles, spell words on the board.
Right, but those... Like, why can't I just make a word over here down in the corner?
Well,
because it has to intersect. This is a fucking there's an explanation. And everybody gets indoctrinated into Scrabble in their life.
The indoctrination theory. Let's go there. as an aside to that, Zynga is going to start selling board games, and they're going to sell a Word with Friends.
I saw it. It's ridiculous.
Game.
And it looks like Scrabble.
I just want to sue them for them. Like, it makes me so angry that that's allowed.
Sue absurd. Them for them.
I'm doing absurd. A citizen's sue.
Can
citizens
I do that?
Lawsuit right now.
It just seems so unfair.
I just love the fact that board games are catching on. I just saw the latest Game Informer has a board game section, and like, come on, it's happening. Get on board, people.
I want to do.
There's a ton. By the way, this weekend at IndieCade, if you are here in the Los Angeles area, come out to Culver City. IndieCade is in town, and there are a number of board games this year at IndieCade. A number
as
of
there should be.
Experimental board games.
Did you see Zach Gage's board game?
No.
The guy who did Spell Tower?
Mm-mm.
He doing a board game. It looks really cool. We talked about it on the show a couple of weeks ago on Totally Rad Show. It's called Guts of Glory, and it's a board game based on competitive eating.
What?
Each person has a mouth board in front of them, and you have to stuff food into it, and then decide which food you're going to be able to regurgitate. You have to regurgitate out food to get other food in. Brilliant. Really. He did a Kickstarter. Wow. It was successful, and it's going to be made. So,
wow, okay.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. Only someone who has auditioned for a Burger King ad could appreciate that. It's kind of disgusting. Anyway, yeah, I mean, that was the point of all that, is that I still, like, I think things have changed to one degree. And to another thing is that, like, now we just have these really immersive games, and I just want to get on with the immersion point. And I think maybe part of it is that, look, those games back then, they had more interface around the screen. They were much more a lot of them. The experience of playing them was as much in your head.
Yes.
And so people love that. There was a lot of imaginative part, right? So
that's a lot of things the designers of Banana were talking about
there was
when
a
they
lot
came
of,
onto my show last week.
There was a lot of a mechanical nature of I'm learning the mechanisms that I need to ahead of time so that I can go do this thing. Whereas now it's like the escapism when it works is so perfect of you're just completely enwrapped in this atmospheric experience.
Yeah.
So I don't know.
I think it's great.
I like the Halo approach. I think that Halo started this when the very first Halo had that moment where you are the chief waking up inside the capsule, and within a few minutes you knew exactly how to play, but it was such a fantastic, like, here is the way you work around, here's how you move, here's how you fire,
yeah,
here's
it was all your gun. Contextual.
And then it was all contextual, and it was right in the flow of the game, and you came out of that, and you were done.
And now there's so many games that they're trying to go for that, and it's so arbitrary how...
Like, they do it so slowly. Like, this is how you walk. And then, like, for 15 minutes, you're learning how to walk. And then you can't shoot anything yet. Mark of the Ninja had, like, the demo first level was kind of, like, teaching you how to play. And it was just the right amount of hand-holding that where I figured out how to be stealth, but still sucked at it. That's another story.
That's a cool game, by the way.
Super All right. Cool game. Another cool game, because I really got to talk about it, lest it get too far away.
Yeah, do it.
It's Tokyo Jungle.
Hit me.
Okay, I am completely of different minds about Tokyo Jungle because it is, as I talked about before, a game that harkens back to that crazy era of Dreamcast when they would just publish anything and it was ridiculous and fun because it is ridiculous.
Yeah.
It is totally ridiculous. The scenario for Tokyo Jungle, if you don't know, is that humanity has disappeared from the face of the earth and the animals have taken over Tokyo and you get to play an animal trying to survive. And... you probably do get to play a panda because there's lots and lots of unlockable animals.
I've seen pandas.
Yeah. There's tons of unlockable animals. You start off, though, as either...
Do they know kung fu?
Remains to be proven or not. Mm. Maybe DLC.
You start off as either a Pomeranian or a deer.
Nice.
And then you have to survive. And, like, it's really a fairly simple sort of game.
Did you enjoy it, though? Because, I mean, I agree with everything you say so far... But I did not like it.
But you love animals so much.
I don't like being an animal that has to attack and eat other animals.
What about your Squizzleberry?
I don't even know.
I was trying to say it fast so that people would just assume it was a real Pokemon.
That was supposed to be a Pokemon?
Yeah.
That's not what I thought you were talking about.
And it got weird. No, berries are for the Pokemon to eat.
Flazzle Flizzle. What are they called?
I guess they do hurt each other.
Now we're in a Dr. Seuss book.
Now you're just making up words. Something about the gameplay mechanic that I found not only repetitive, I just didn't enjoy, and maybe it's because I'm a total wuss and I don't like animals killing each other like that. Nothing about it brought me joy.
So,
do you rend animals live
from limb?
I don't
completely disagree with her, unfortunately. Because I really, really...
Does your Pomeranian / deer get vicious?
Your deer doesn't, but the Pomeranian doesn't. Yeah. So there's two types. There's carnivores and herbivores. Nice. And the herbivores...
Why did you play the herbivore?
Well, I was a Pomeranian.
Why did you play the herbivore?
Well, because then you're a deer.
What's wrong with being a Sika deer?
Well, you can't... It's hard to play as the deer because you can't really do anything.
You can eat shrubbery.
Can you not be adorable?
And you still get to mate.
Yeah, and that's weird too.
Is it weird?
I mean, it's weird.
They just mount each other and mate, dude. They go to it.
And then you have babies.
There's no button pressing I have to do?
Nope.
No vibration on the controllers. Mm. Sorry, this isn't going to work for you. No, but then you have children, and then you are all of them, and you're the whole pack.
Which is really cool.
Sure.
And there's like this idea of... So part of the progression system in the game is that not only does the animal that you're playing at any given time earn progression in its status, but then when it mates, some of its characteristics are carried forward. Some of its traits are carried forward into its...
Like what kind of traits?
So like if it's, you've gotten
like
better...
Like it's good at football.
Like if it's better at attack. Or if
math.
It's faster. Or math, right. If the gorilla has gotten better at math, you might eventually advance to Planet of the Apes. They take over. Zeus is there.
Nah, I mean,
Zeus,
that's
Dr. Zeus
how the game progressed, then that game truly would have made him
up. So there is a story.
Spore.
So let me back up so people understand. So the game trades on a couple of game mechanics. And I actually don't completely disagree with Nicole. I really want to like the game because the idea of running around as an animal in Tokyo after the apocalypse is cute and funny and hilarious. And like there are parts of it that want to be so silly. There's this, like you get presents throughout the game that are like dress up pieces for your dog or like whatever.
But they're irrelevant. They're like, they're not even aesthetic.
They give you bonuses.
Can't really wear them.
They give you
stat bonuses.
Them? No, you do wear them, but you don't see them in the game in-game model. You see them in your menu screen.
Lame.
Yeah. If I could eat other animals while wearing like a dress and sunglasses, maybe
I'd feel
better.
But you can wear a dress
better.
And sunglasses.
Not while I'm murdering.
Wait a minute. You wear a dress and sunglasses in the menu? So it's just like a level of abstraction that is
so it's like,
oh, you're wearing
like
a quote-unquote dress and sunglasses.
Well, no, it's like the paper doll part of any role-playing game. And you dress your character, but then it doesn't show up in the game because the game models don't
when
do that.
When I put armor on in other games, it shows up.
Yeah, it's because she's only played games since 1995. And we remember.
That's true, right. Though.
All those games we were just
you're
talking
still
about.
It.
In the manual, it tells you that it's actually on your character. You don't see it.
It's always actually been on my character.
What it comes down to, though, is that a big part of the game is a stealth game. The big part of the game is moving from cover to cover, not being observed by bigger animals that can kill you, and preying on smaller animals, or if you're an herbivore, sneaking over to the plant and eating the fruit off of it, and keeping yourself alive. There are environmental things that happen.
Berries.
Like it rains, toxic rain sometimes. So you have to get out of the rain.
Sometimes there are velociraptors. I mean, sometimes it happens.
There are the velociraptors have returned.
It doesn't make any sense.
Velociraptors.
Velociraptors here to eat your face.
Now I'm picturing a velociraptor in his Adidas.
The velociraptors.
Mm-hmm.
How is that not already a band name?
I don't. Can we look that up?
They're like hip hop artists that speak really fast.
Yeah,
the Velociraptors.
They're my 311 cover band.
No. Tokyo Jungle. But
Tokyo.
So no, when you get a new animal, aren't you just starting over?
So this is the thing.
Like, why progress?
The game is also very much about high score.
No segue there.
It's very much a score comparison game because it wants you to go back and like a big part of the game is how long can you survive, right? So you start off with your Pomeranian and you start to learn areas of Tokyo. So you're in Shibuya Station, and then you can go up the street to like the shopping area, or you can go down the street to.
But you're still a
Pomeranian.
Right.
And so you have like a certain number of years that you live, and there's a meter at the top that shows how the years are progressing. No, it's just years, you silly. Anyway, I'm not...
Sorry.
I don't feel like we're doing a good job of talking about the game.
I know.
It's getting disrupted.
I feel like we are.
It's weird. Like
it's a bizarre game,
it's
and
a bizarre
it deserves
game,
a bizarre discussion.
And I wanted to have
fun come
to
the right place.
Because I love bizarre games, but like... I think the problem is that it's a bizarre game that then tries in its game mechanic to be a little bit too serious about itself. Like the whole survival element and stalking element becomes like it's like that part is really like the whole staying alive is very serious. If you're not really paying attention to keeping yourself fed and watching your environment, you're going to expire pretty quickly.
And if you're not constantly breeding, you're going to run out of things to play as.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel just in life.
But and to your point of it taking itself very seriously, that is not how they marketed it at all in any of their trailers. When I first saw a trailer for it, you know, months ago, I thought, this is so bizarre. I can't wait to know more about this. It looks so silly. I get to play as an animal and fight things, and they made it seem like the dinosaurs and the ducks were going to team up and I could be chicks and it was going to be crazy. Chicks like baby chickens. But and then when I played it, it was super serious and slow, and it was as more survival horror than anything that you've played, I'm sure. And
not certainly lately.
And it just wasn't what I wanted it to be, and I felt like it could have been a lot more.
I kind of agree. And so you wind up spending time stalking through tall grass, trying to stay out of trouble and kill things, and eventually win up enough points to be able to mate. And there were fun things. The other thing is that there are all like you can go into the library list and see all these cool animals you want to play, but they're all locked. And the weight and the rate at which you earn the points to unlock them is so slow that they like seriously, I realize they put a lot of work into the game, though they anticipate that you're going to play the shit out of this game if you want to see all of the different animals in it. Mm-hmm. It's not something
you basically go from small dog to slightly bigger dog to like cats. And like, I mean, it's this weird, slow progression. Like, I can't even imagine how much you have to play to be like a dinosaur.
Yeah, it's really a lot.
A lot.
You'd have to a lot. The answer is a lot.
You'd have to play a lot to get to be a dinosaur.
And I'm curious if anyone has gotten to the dinosaur.
I'm sure there are. I mean, so there's people, I'm confident there are people with whom the whole play mechanic totally jives because there is depth there. There's like this cool like whole thing of the environment can be toxic to you at time. Survival is difficult. Knowing which animals you can trump. Surviving, of course, then breeding. Getting your pack going.
Can you crossbreed animals?
No, I don't think
See, that would have been cool too. Velocipomeranian? Velociranian?
Velociranian.
All right.
Pomeraptor?
No. Pomeraptor. Let's draw this thing to a close.
Can we get some Photoshops from the... No?
I'm sure we can get some Photoshops. How about we do a finishing move?
Sounds good.
Finishing moves.
And I will kick us off because we were talking about old school. And, okay, I realize that we have talked before about Kickstarters to people's chagrin. I cannot restrain myself from talking about this Kickstarter because it involves this game designer who I have this irrational like worship of, and that would be Tom Hall. And primarily that's because Anachronox is
great game, classic.
Is one of my most favorite games. It was this incredible Unreal Engine role-playing game in a sort of Blade Runner like future that had a sort of Final Fantasy like
combat
real
system.
Turn-based combat system and an incredibly awesome sense of humor, since we were talking about humor earlier. And Tom has been out of the business for a little, not out of the business, but has been away from the limelight for a while. He's come back. His new studio, he's working with Brenda Braithwaite, who I did not know by name, but worked on every Wizardry ever made. Every single Wizardry she worked on.
Which was 8 or 9 of them.
I guess it's 9 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And although not put forward, which is even awesome that they're not putting this guy in the limelight, but also a part of this team is John Romero.
Really?
Yes. And they are Kickstartering a game called Old School Role-Playing Game. So the fact that they are wanting to make an old school role-playing game.
Oh, that's amazing.
With Brenda Braithwaite from Wizardry.
Does it have turn-based? And like
everything.
Does it have a manual?
A manual who?
Manuel Lewis.
Sanders?
Does it have something for you to read so you can learn how to play?
I'm sure it will, because they talked about all that kind of stuff. All the things that you loved, all of the detailed systems. Now, here's the scary part. Oh, I mean, this is a really, obviously, this is a crew that has great pedigree. They're looking to get $1 million to kick the thing off. So they're already like, I kind of wish they were just going for a publisher, because like that's already like one of those ginormous things. Their stretch goal is $1.9 million.
Well, it's they don't want to be greedy and ask for two.
And well, and you know what? They are asking for two, because if they hit 1.9, they're not making one game. They're making two games. One will be Tom Hall's game. One will be Brenda Braithwaite's game. So anyway,
that's not going to ever be delayed.
Yeah, it's going to be a mess. But like I said, I have this irrational, like complete craziness for stuff that Tom does. Tom also worked on Rise of the Triad, so he goes way back, and super awesome designer. And I hope these guys can I hope something comes of this, whether they make their Kickstarter or not. I hope that this bodes well for them making something. I'd like maybe one day, please, an Acronox sequel. Please, please. But this sounds awesome. So that's my finishing move. Who would like to go next? Jeff.
Jeff Wood.
It's, man, I'm tempted to change mine up at the last minute just because I, you know, I've been playing so much of Banana and and wanting turn-based combat in my back in my role-playing games. That sounds so awesome. So awesome, Garnet. I want that. I hope that game has turn-based combat. But I will tell you, that next week on TRS, we're going to be talking about a board game. It's been a while since I've talked about board games here. Most common question I get is intro board games, people that are new to tabletop designer board games. This is a great episode coming up. We're talking about a game called Smash Up, and it's brand new. It's really fun. Basically, there's a bunch of different decks all themed of different iconic genre tropes like ninjas and pirates and zombies and robots and dinosaurs and like Harry Potter wizards and all these different things. And you take any two of those decks and you put them together and that's your team. And you have this weird mashup. Smash Up is the name of the game. And then you play against other players trying to take down these bases. Really simple, easy to learn. You can learn it in about a minute and a half. It's super fun, really great theme, great artwork. Highly recommended. It was the hit of Gen Con this year, and now you can finally get it. It is really fun, and I urge you to watch that episode. You can see us playing it and see it in action. That episode, I think, comes out on Tuesday.
And as always, we have links to the Totally Rad Show in the show note page for We Can Confirm.
Sweet.
I wish I had something cool to plug like you guys did. I didn't have anything cool to plug. I was just going to talk about myself a little bit.
Talk about yourself. You're cool to plug.
I wanted to talk about my...
No, just keep going. Yeah. Just keep going.
I kind of missed it. Okay, so I was going to talk about my top two favorite Pokemon and just kind of like why they meant a lot to me.
You were going to talk about three.
I couldn't think of a third. I couldn't narrow it down, so I just wanted to go with top two. It's like picking your favorite band, you know? So, and now I just feel uncomfortable because Garnet's making weird faces.
He's a child. Let's just keep going.
I'm a child. You can see the look on your face.
It's okay. Go ahead.
Maybe we should talk about being grown-ups.
Yeah, we should. This is your finishing move. We're not supposed to talk.
But I don't know anything about that.
I don't even know what to say now.
Just say your Pokemon.
Okay, favorite Pokemon. I really like Espeon because it's psychic type evolution of Eevee. And I really like Squirtle, which is it's actually a starter Pokemon from Pokemon Blue and Red. Water type, actually the most adorable. And I think that just kind of one of the problems that I've had with the... with the newer Pokemon in the more recent installments, is that they're not as endearing. And I feel like a lot of the Pokemon, they're kind of more mechanical looking, more robotic looking. And I feel like Pokemon's gone in a weird art direction. And I'd kind of just like to know what other people thought about it. Maybe not you guys. I don't really care what you guys think about it, because you guys have no opinion.
So you're saying that they've gone less adorable and more futuristic, sort of like Robotech looking?
It's not even that they didn't... They're not adorable anymore. It said they kind of just they went for a completely different art style.
They're like Gundam now.
They're more Gundam. Lot of them are more Gundam style.
Mm-hmm.
Uh huh. Opa.
Before they were like platypus, you know.
Yeah. They were the creative cute creatures, and there are a few cuter creatures that are like lower level Pokemon. But I feel like the art style changed, and it was a weird decision, and I kind of want to know what, not you two, because you don't care at all, but maybe some of the listeners, what they think about the evolution of the Pokemon art style, if you will.
And where could they have gone?
What?
And where could they have gone? I mean, they kind of exhausted the, like, quick library of recognizable animal types, like, you know, insect and...
Sure. So, like, half giraffe, half zebra. I mean, they've done that. Yeah, I understand why they went for a more futuristic kind of art style, but nothing else in the game changed, so why that?
Good point.
Yeah. And how come... Okay, never mind. How come they can't they can't do some type of gameplay mechanic where it plays like Phantom Hourglass, where you use the stylus and you have kind of this like combat-based exploration using both? Because I feel like Phantom Hourglass used the DS better than any other DS game, and I feel like Pokemon could have so easily implemented that, and I'm like, why haven't they?
Excellent questions. There you go. Now, and if people
you
are
the wrong audience.
No, if they have something to answer, I tell you what, we will hold the answers till Nicole is back in, whatever, 3 or 4 weeks.
And we have a full-out Pokemon discussion.
And
yes.
Yes, I will bring it. I will. Make it my responsibility to gather all of these for you, Nicole, and I will make sure that when you are on next time, that we have the feedback to talk about.
Pokemon.
I'm sure there's gonna be a lot of people talking about that. Actually, right. I have a feeling that we're in the
minority. I have a feeling too. So yeah. There you go. That's why I'm gonna make sure and write all that down so that when she talks about it next time, we'll have a reasonable conversation.
Maybe I'll bring in some of the fanfic I used to write about the character I created.
What's the name of your character you created?
It's Nicole. I always name myself Nicole, and I was my parents were Pokemon zookeepers, and my job was I was an evolution trainer, and I specialized in Pokemon that had weird or bizarre evolutions or didn't have evolutions at all, and I wanted to know why. And I would travel across Kanto, Johto, whatever region, and capture Pokemon for the zoo. And in the zoo, we would study the animals and better their lives. It wasn't like a capture zoo like we
of course
in cages. We learned from them, and they had wonderful lives. And that's I have notebooks.
She totally got the message of the cartoon. Totally got it.
Uh-huh.
I'm impressed.
Uh-huh.
It's been too long since I played Pokemon, so I need a refresher, of course, I think.
Dragonair. Dragonite? Dragonair? Dratini to Dragonair to Dragonite. Dragonite's my third favorite Pokemon. Good night.
She just dropped the mic.
There we go. There's your ending note. All right, stick around. When we come back, we will do a very quick finishing tailgate, not finishing moves. We already did finishing moves. Damn it. I'm off. All right. Thanks very much to Micah, who are helping us out here at the Atlantis Group. Staying
like
late.
A maniac.
Dave, for bringing us the dancing like a maniac and dropping the beats reference.
People didn't even hear.
I know.
Every break we would go to,
he's got the next
filled
music
our
hit.
Ears.
Can we take awesome. A moment to thank Cher?
Yes.
Who really supplied us with energy tonight?
She really did. She did her part. If we could only turn back time, we would
if
all
we could only
be
find
able to...
a way.
There you go, folks. That is your weekend confirmed. And if you're not sticking around to the tailgate afterwards, we are Ghost.
Damn, what time is it?
I need a drink, Hangaway.
I need a drink, Alizé.
I need a drink,
Hangaway.
I need a drink, Champagne.
I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all, yeah.
I need a drink, Absolute.
I need a drink, Hypnotic.
I need a drink, Hennessy.
I need a drink, Intertonic.
I can't drink all by myself. I'ma need all of y'all here.
It's only 12 o'clock, but I need another bottle. Cause me and my crew won't end no folks.
Weekend Confirmed is brought to you by the Gamefly app, the must-have app for gamers. The app is free and available now for iPhone, iPad, Android tablets, and other mobile devices. Who's ready for a little Week 5 football? I know I am. Anything to take my mind off of that humiliating Monday night performance. It was awful. Like,
I felt for you, man. I usually have some joy in making fun of your team losing, and even I was just sad for you.
It's all right. And here's the thing is I've been, and people were actually like, why are you down so much and all that kind of stuff? Like, look, I've been a fan of the Cowboys for 35 years. I love them, so I can't turn my head away. But what bothers me the most is that they clearly, by the way they play on the field, have players who are talented at positions, but absolutely just refuse to be able to put together good games together. And I don't know whether that's a Jerry playing GM thing or just the string of coaches they've had or whatever it is, but you got way too many talented guys there to have that sort of just like fall apart at the seams thing all the time. And They've gotten renowned for it. You know, they need to get over it. I don't know what to shake up to do. Anyway, we didn't come to talk about that. We'll do a quick recap on the Weekend Confirmed Fantasy Leagues. I am still holding on to first place in both West and the East.
He's a man.
In the West, I won again. Now I'm 4-0. I won 124-74 over the Sharks on the backs of Eli, Marcus Colston, and AJ Green. Jeff, you lost to Cutler's Bad Fur Day. You got to set your lineups, brother.
I know.
Do you need me to help you with setting lineups?
I've been doing a play.
I know.
And it's very time consuming, and I apologize.
There's an intermission.
So the high cholesterols remain in first place in Division 1, and my Ghosts are still up in Division 2. Now, my damn team lost in the other league, but I stayed atop my division because there's only one 4-0 team there, and that would be the Goodyear Daleks. You lost to the Gotham Rose, and my props go to Captain Awesome and the F-Tards, who beat me on the backs of Scott Chandler and Peyton, 128-88, doing in my Romo lead team. Yeah, I had Romo quarterback in that team. That was not a good situation.
Five picks.
Yeah, so anyway, we will move forward, and Jeff will have his lineup set this weekend. Won't you, Jeff?
Yes, indeed.
Excellent. All right, now we move on to the picks. Last week, we had a bunch of 2-1s, but Del Rio, 3-0 last weekend.
Oh.
He actually went 2-1 last weekend.
This is a tight standings here. I'm still atop at 7-5, but there's 3 6-6s, and I mean, really not much breathing.
Well, and Andrea right there at 6-5, she's going to catch up to us numerically this week, so yeah. She'll have one bonus pick. Jeff still with his two bonus picks will catch up two weeks
James.
Away. I'm sorry, James. And then I'm still in the cellar, but I'm getting better. All right, so here we go on this week's picks. We have the Atlanta Falcons -3 points at the Washington Redskins. We go with the are you going to go with the Falcons staying hot, or are you going to go with the Redskins at home?
I'm going to go with the Falcons staying hot. Washington, I cannot get a handle on what's going on with this team. RG3, I don't know. I don't trust this team. And Atlanta is a very good team, and they're going far in the playoffs this year, I think. And I'm going to take them to beat them away.
All right.
And give the points.
He couldn't be any more wrong. I think that the Redskins are really going to shine this weekend. And I feel like, what's his name? Reggie 3? Is that what we call
Reggie,
him?
Reggie 3, yes.
That's what the kids call him. I don't know if you guys, maybe you guys aren't hip. Whatever his name is.
RG.
3. That's what the kids call it, you RG3. Guys. I'm telling you. Look it up online. I'm not in the wrong here. I think he's really going to pull it together, and I have a really good feeling about them. I think the offense is really going to be where they shine, and I'm pulling for the Redskins.
They're going to use Squirtle?
I don't even know. I almost feel like, I kind of want to do serious analysis, but at the same time, I kind of just want to like jump out the window too. I don't know what to do here. I think the Redskins are due a falling back to earth. Although RG3 has played out of his cleats, obviously, I think that he is not. I think he takes too much abuse. I mean, I hear them talking about that on NFL Network, and then watching what they've been showing and talking about that, he's taking a lot of hits, and
Yeah,
and Atlanta's defense, if you go in and look at it, has been the quiet, like, other half of that team. Like, their offense has been so good, it's gotten all the attention. But that defense has quietly put together a number of sacks. They've been really strong on pressure D. And I think that if they turn that up there, that they're just 3 points isn't enough.
Right.
Even though they're on the road. So I'm definitely going with the Falcons. And just to catch people up real quickly, Andrea is going with the Washington Redskins. James is going with the Washington Redskins. Del Rio is going with the Atlanta Falcons, and Micah would like to choose the Atlanta Falcons. So pretty good split up.
I'm pretty divided on this.
Yeah. Now, this one is for Dave, of course. We have the Seattle Seahawks getting 3 points going into the Carolina Panthers home turf. This is easy for me. I am all over Carolina because Seattle is a great team at home, but man, they don't hit the road very well.
It is true.
And I just don't seem to be able to stand up. There's a long trip across. It's a big, full across the country trip for them. And they're not a great road team, and they don't travel well in the first place. I'm all over Carolina on this one.
I'm going to take Seattle, and I don't believe in Superman and his ways. And right. I think that team is troubled in ways that we haven't even seen yet. And Seattle is a strong, that NFC West, watch out, baby.
All right. Dave's defending his Seahawks in there. Dave, I take it you're taking the Seahawks. We'll knock that one off real quick. Micah, which way are you going on this one? Seahawks-Panthers. Oh, he likes all Seahawks, too. He likes Carolina. I like it. Both Andrea and James are in with me on Carolina and Micah on Carolina. So what do you think, Nicole?
I think this one's going to be a very close game, and I feel like both teams are really coming into their own. And like you said, the Falcons do not play
professional
away, but I feel like just because of where we are in the season, that there's a chance that they could turn it around and really surprise the Panthers.
So what you're saying is you think both teams are going to play hard?
I think they're going to play hard, and you know what? It's anyone's game.
Wow. I give up.
Come on.
It's awesome. No, it's absolutely awesome. And then last but not least, we have the matchup everyone's talking about, the quarterbacks.
Wow.
So you got Peyton, and you got the man, Tom Brady.
Man, that second half of that game last week was insane.
Yeah, it really was.
Unbelievable.
So now you've got Denver +6.5 at New England. I have to think about this for a minute, so actually I'm going to listen to what you have to say. Give me a little analysis. Break it down for me.
I'm not as good at breaking it down as you are. I'm taking Denver. Okay. I'm taking the points. I think New England is a shaky team this year. They looked fucking amazing in that second half last
week. Yeah,
they did. But, and they're at home, so it's hard for me to, I just, I feel like it's going to be a close game. I think Denver pulled it together last week, and, you know, Peyton may not have the arm strength. All his passes are short recently, but they're efficient, and I think they're going to play well.
Well, they really worked Hillman into the offense well last weekend.
Yeah.
I mean, he adds a nice compliment to McGahee. And McGahee, with a little bit of spelling, you know, that means he can, like, a little fresher legs throughout the game. He's been running – like, McGahee's, like, rejuvenated. He's running great this year.
Yeah.
And I think I have to take the points in Denver. And my final, like, assessment of that is that, you know – before the season started, we all thought, man, New England's defense is going to be terrible. And no one has really exposed their defense.
Mm-hmm.
So either their defense has gotten a lot better since then, or it's just waiting to be exposed. And if anyone is going to figure out exposing it and opening it up and making it look exposed,
Peyton Manning.
It would be Peyton Manning. So I see Denver taking it to them, although not a low-scoring affair by any stretch of the imagination.
No. I'll take the over.
I'll take the over, please. But I'm also going to take the Denver Broncos.
Both of you are going to be very, very wrong when this game happens. Now, we have both quarterbacks
who are...
We're
going to feel so fucking stupid. No. We're going to be like, God, we are so damn dumb.
Both of these quarterbacks, they have so much riding on them right now. And we expect so much from them because they've had such decorated careers. And I feel like their skill is really going to cancel... They're going to cancel each other out. And what we're going to see is this being a defense game. And we're going to see it coming down to the people who are going to be stopping the offense. That's what the defense does. And I really do think this is going to be a win for the Patriots.
Nicole,
I love you.
She needs to be on every tailgate. She needs to be on every tailgate.
I know, it's amazing.
You guys just watch. We're gonna talk about this next week,
she's
and we're gonna see.
3-0.
And
she's gonna be like, I give up. I'm going to go jump off of a bridge.
So she's not only are you predicting a New England victory, but you're mm-hmm. predicting a low scoring affair, like 17-10 New England.
You watch the defense hold each other back, and we're going to see whose wall breaks.
All right.
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down that wall. I just made it political.
Wonderful.
I mean, 1989 political.
Seriously, she's amazing.
She's good. She's
amazing.
Good.
We'll see you guys.
Andrea went with the Denver Broncos. James went the other direction and went with the New England Patriots. We've got the booth still with Micah, who's going with the Clam Chowdas. He's going with the Chowda Heads. And then Dave's. He's got Denver and the points. And then last but not least, we've got the extra catch-ups. The catch-ups are both of them have to pick Tennessee plus 5.5 at Minnesota. And Andrea, of course, I kind of baited her on this one, went with Minnesota.
What do you think? Minnesota for real this year?
No.
No?
Mm-hmm. I'm not convinced. Although
AP's back,
changes
baby.
The equation.
He's back.
Actually, AP changes the equation, and their defense has been playing really well. I'm just not, yeah, I don't know. And James went with Minnesota as well, which I was a little bit surprised for. And then the last game, and this is just kind of mean because it's a tough game to pick. I gave James Philadelphia plus 3 at Pittsburgh, which is
surprised again points.
A really tough, tough game. Oh, yeah. Dude, Pittsburgh at home.
Yeah, and I guess Philadelphia is sort of in disarray right now.
That's the at-home advantage. I mean, that's the difference. Like, it's a pick-em, but Pittsburgh's at home. So James went with Pittsburgh. So there you go, folks. You can see how we are doing next week. Also, if you check in on the official show thread, one of the listeners has started check on ESPN deal where you can make your own picks and follow along as well. So there you go.
And how about them Oakland A's, huh? Pretty cool.
Yeah.
Bummed that the Dodgers kind of dropped the ball there. I mean, I was really hoping that
Dodgers
they'd make
and
it
the
playoffs.
Angels, huh?
Oh, man, the Angels are a heartbreak. I don't want to talk about it.
Are you a baseball fan?
I understand baseball.
I can't tell
baseball.
When she's bullshitting or not.
I understand baseball. Lost. I've gone to many I had a baseball game. I went to batting practice with the Angels, and a ball hit me.
That's not how you win.
Yeah. No. No. It's a great story, though.
It is a great story.
It was like an indent in my arm.
Do you remember it? Oh, your arm.
arm, yeah.
You know, I'm not a huge baseball fan, but I swear to me, because I was actually watching the end of the A's game while I was working out.
Yeah.
And I swear it looked to me like the Rangers had a Cowboys hangover. It was ridiculous. like who's that guy like just dropping that fly? Yeah. Like how do you do that in a game where you got a chance to win the championship?
It's pretty awesome end of the season for baseball. It's an amazing end of the season. And plus we get a triple crown winner, first time in 45 years, whatever it is.
First time in 45 years.
Pretty great.
All right, everybody, next week we'll be back with bananas and oranges. So
stay tuned.
Stay tuned.